Yeah, I'm 25. That's a quarter of a century. And I've been doing YouTube full-time for a nickel of a century. My life's practically over. I'm at a point now where when people recognize me, they'll say, OMG, James, I've been watching you since the 8th grade. And I'll be like, OMG, your beard is bigger than mine. So I've been thinking, you know those going through puberty videos your 8th grade science teacher shows you for some reason? The ones that are like, hey boys, I'm the puberty platypus, and I'm here to tell you that your body is going through some wonderful changes. You're gonna start growing hair in weird places, and smelling bad, but that's just the wonders of life. And then for the girl one, it's like, oh, ladies, you're gonna want to sit down for this one. Well, I think they need to make a puberty part 2 video that they show to high school seniors and prepare them better for the quote-unquote adult life they're about to face. Schools just give you a piece of paper and a funny hat and send you off into the world expecting you to figure out your intricate and complicated life through what? Trial and error? I want the puberty part 2 video that I'm planning on making to start like this. The puberty platypus will come back on screen and will be like, well, kids, you did it. See? Puberty wasn't so bad. For some of you. Unfortunately, dear children, this is only the beginning. And then he'll start talking about all the fun things you can expect in the following years. Like, instead of growing hair in new places, for some of you, your hair is gonna start thinning and falling out. And if you're a guy worried about hair loss, then I've got good news. This video is sponsored by Bald People. They're paying me money to tell you to just shave it all. Shave it. Looking good, Rush! You're also gonna be perpetually tired. And before you start thinking, I'm not gonna be tired, I'm gonna get 8 hours of sleep every night. First of all, no you're not. And second of all, that's not going to help. You will still be tired, and there's no escape. Why do you think adults say, ha ha ha, don't talk to me till I've had my coffee? It's because every adult, from the moment they wake up, is dead tired. And we need stimulants just to function. You're also going to start getting excited about things you used to think were stupid, like furniture shopping. Sometimes you'll go on Zillow and look at the most expensive houses and think, oh, that's a nice kitchen backsplash, and then wonder where your youth went. Another thing, 90% of the mail you get is worthless, but the other 10% of mail is very, very important. Like, if you ignore it, your water, power, and Wi-Fi get shut off. Important. Or you'll get mail that's like, hey, you owe the government some money, and we know how much money you owe us, but we're not going to tell you, stupid. So you either have to figure that out yourself, or pay another person some money so they can tell you how much money you owe the government. Hey there. I don't want you to be scared of growing up. There's still plenty of pros that come with being older. And also, you can't escape it. You'll get to be independent and make your own decisions. Did your parents never let you get a tattoo? Well, now you can. But I'm going to put it somewhere that I can easily cover it up when I visit them for Christmas. That way it's not weird if I exclusively wear turtlenecks around them. I just like them. Another pro, you won't complain about the food you have at home because you'll only ever buy the food you like and can afford. You're independent now. You can eat cake for breakfast. However, if you do that, your stomach will hurt and you won't be able to move for 8 hours. Okay, at first you'll be able to get by with bagel bites for dinner. That's a standard college-grade meal. But after a couple of years of that abuse, your body will go, yo, do you think you could throw down some, I don't know, fruit every once in a while? Yeah, we gotta make, like, new cells for your developing brain, and we've been making them solely out of bagel bites. It is genuinely upsetting that I have to figure out what I have to eat 3 times a day. There are some days where I'm hungry, but I'm not craving anything, and I know I have to eat, but I'm looking through my fridge, and I end up eating string cheese and grapes for lunch. On a bagel. I wish I could just unhinge my jaw and eat a month's worth of food like a snake. Do snakes only eat once a month? I don't know, I hate snakes. 50% of my driving destinations is to the grocery store, and the other 50% is drive-thrus. It's all food-based. Oh, actually, sometimes I do have to go to the gas station. Wait, that's just food for my car. I've been trying to eat out less, so I bought boxed frozen orange chicken instead of going to Panda Express. But then I realized, I'm still eating out, I'm just heating up the orange chicken in my own microwave. Some of you might like cooking. I don't. Whenever I cook a meal, I purposely cook way more food than I need so I can get 2 meals out of only cooking one. I would rather eat progressively staler pasta all week than have to cook every day. But even if you like cooking, I know one aspect of it you don't like. Cleaning up the mess afterwards. Why do you think the rule, I cooked it, you clean it, exists? And now that you're an adult, you're about to learn, it never stops. Get used to doing the dishes and laundry, because as long as you eat and sweat, those are two chores you do until the grave. Laundry is such a prevalent chore that I guarantee someone watching this video needs to put the wash into the dryer, but instead they're watching YouTube. Well, go on. Leave. I don't know how I'm gonna handle folding dishes and cleaning laundry for the rest of my life. I'm only 25 and already burned out from it. Hey, speaking of burnout, I want to talk about something I just learned recently called having a healthy work-life balance. Some of you might have started working from home this last year. Welcome to the club. You now have no reason to go outside. So take it from a guy who's been working from home for 5 years. Go outside anyway. There's definitely benefits to working from home. Like, you get to work in your pajamas and... But it can be tough to work and live under the same roof, and I think a lot of young people have this mindset of being on the grind is a good thing, or at least a normal one. While it is important to work hard to achieve your goals, you need to be aware of burnout. And as a content creator who is his own boss, it's very easy to fall into an unhealthy work ethic. If you think your boss is annoying, try having a boss that lives inside your head and will not shut up about working. It could be Saturday and you're hanging out with your friends and your boss in the back of your head will say, you could be working. There will always be work that needs to be done. You will always feel anxious about not posting. And since you technically live in the office, you could theoretically work well into the early hours of the morning every night. Or morning, I don't know. I want to talk more about burnout and my YouTube journey and how I'm managing it, but that will be for another time because I've been working on it. I'm definitely getting better. I'm more relaxed on the weekends and going to more social settings, vaccinated, of course. It's taken me a while to learn the importance of a healthy work-life balance and that it's okay to work on yourself. I'm not sure if you all related to that last part. Maybe give it a couple of years. But anyways, growing up is a part of life. Adulthood is something that you all should be looking forward to. You learn and experience so many things, and that's just your early 20s. And before I go, is there anything you want to add, Puberty Platypus? Am I ever going to find something I'm truly passionate about? I drift through every day doing what feels like nothing, seeing all my high school friends getting married and starting families, doing things that they're happy and excited about. It makes me feel even more isolated in my state of confusion and solitude. Who am I? Why don't I know myself anymore? What went wrong? Bagel Bite? To tell you this story, I need to introduce to you a new character in my life. I try to keep some parts of my life private and off YouTube, but this story wouldn't make sense if I called this person a friend I know. We've both talked about it, and she's okay with me telling you that, guys, I have received the highest milestone a YouTuber can receive. A girlfriend! Who I will be calling for the remainder of this video, GIF. That's right, I have a girlfriend now, so you can stop asking if I'm into guys. I mean, I guess I could still technically be into guys, but please stop asking. Dang, I got muscles and a girlfriend now? Man, even I'm jealous of myself. Now, to get the elephant in the room out of the way, it's not Jaden, and it never was Jaden. And it's not the elephant either. The elephant broke up with me because I kept calling her an elephant. I know that the internet likes their ships, but let me just say this once and for all. It's not okay to ship real people that have their own lives and relationships off of YouTube. Hopefully this is all obvious and you're as grossed out as much as I am, because some of you don't seem to mind that we're all real people behind the screen, and it can be really damaging to our personal lives. So getting things back on track, one day during quarantine, me and my girlfriend were feeling lethargic and a little sad, as one does in quarantine. We had both bought Disneyland annual passes and were planning on going to the park every single day of 2020, but the timing could not have worked out more horribly, and I still don't know if I'm getting a refund. I'm not, aren't I? I had one friend tell me that something he did to cheer up was that him and his GIF drove down to the beach and had a picnic in their car, and they just relaxed and watched the sunset. And I thought that sounded fun and tranquil as shit, so me and my GIF decided that we too were also going to visit the recently opened beach and be tranquil as shit. obviously we were going to wear masks and stay 6 feet apart from everyone, including each other. In my head, I was imagining we would just find a secluded area and we would watch the wet, white, watery waves wash westward while wondering what weather we would want. What? So that weekend, we packed up our beach supplies, sandwiches, and our doggies, and we started our hour-long journey to total tranquility. Floof gets very excited whenever she's wearing a leash, and in car rides, she has this energy like, "Yes, we get to go somewhere! I wonder where we're going!" While Gif's dog, who I will be giving the fake name of Floof 2, is more like, "I wonder where we're going." Our journey started out smoothly, and there were no problems for about 45 minutes. But I wouldn't be making this video if the entire trip was all smooth sailing. All of a sudden, Floof 2 starts going, which, if you own a dog, you know that means things are about to go down. Or rather, things are about to come up, and emotions and cleanliness are about to go down. So Floof 2 threw up all over my Jif's leg and on the car floor. We quickly pulled over before anyone passed out from how bad it smelled, and we used the napkins we packed to wipe everything down. We put the throw-up napkins into a sandwich bag, which now became the throw-up bag. A minor setback, to be sure, but we were still determined to relax and have a good time. But I wouldn't be making this video if the entire trip was smooth sailing minus dog vomit. As we kept driving, we were all a little tense from the unprompted dog regurgitation, but I had a solution to ease everyone's mood. Since we were on our way to the beach, I played popular beach music like Surfin' USA. But by the time we got to California Girls, Floof 2 started going, and I mean really going, like West Coast representin' going. And Gif put her hands up like, "Oh, oh, oh!" Floof 2 puked 2 times in 1 60-minute trip. That day, we learned that this California girl has unforgettable motion sickness. It's undeniable. I don't want to go into too much detail because I have to draw the details, but let's just say that Jif's hands were pretty full. I held open the throw-up bag and Gif dumped the second round of puke from her hand into the bag. Also, we were out of napkins because we weren't expecting to have to do this 2 times, let alone 1 times. So Jif had to drive the rest of the way with her hand held up like this. We entertained the idea of Floof 1 licking Gif's hand clean, but after some debating, we decided that doing so would be gross. After 2 dog pukes, we finally got to the beach and saw that it was very crowded and most people weren't even wearing masks. I considered throwing the throw-up bag at them, but after some debate, we decided that we still might need the throw-up bag. Fortunately, we didn't have to debate if going in was still a good idea because as we pulled up, a deputy sheriff was closing the front gate. The beach was at full capacity. "Do not lose hope, Biff," said my gif, "for I shall find a closer spot within a jiff. For looking at my phone, you see, there is a beach within a mile or 3. End of line. So we decided to try another beach, but when we got there, it was already full and blocked off. Maybe if we didn't pull over to clean up dog puke, we would have gotten there in time. But now that I'm thinking about it, it would have been impossible to relax at a beach that was at full capacity in the middle of a pandemic anyways. The good thing about Cali is that the whole edge is a beach, so we could do this all day. I looked on my phone and found another beach 15 minutes away and we headed off. I suggested that we stopped at a Walmart parking lot or something and wash our hands and recoup, but my unnamed Jif was determined to wash her puke-stained hands with the salt water of the Pacific Ocean. We pulled up to the third beach, the parking lot was empty and closed off, but there were still a clean handful of people already there. The beach wasn't even close to capacity, so we could definitely find a secluded enough area and finally relax. And clean up this dog vom like, "Ew, dude." If you're wondering if this beach was closed and these people were just ignoring the closed signs, we thought so too. But there were lifeguards out, so I guess the parking lot was just practicing social distancing or something, I don't know. We had to park the car pretty far away from the beach and walk the rest of the way. And as soon as we stepped out of the car, it was Floof 1's turn to wreak havoc and she dropped about half her body weight in poop onto a grass patch. I don't think this day would have been salvageable if I had to catch that in my hands. Speaking of crap, Floof 2 looked like crap and probably wanted to go home. Meanwhile, Floof 1 was still, "Yeah! I was holding that puppy in, but now we're at our destination!" Could you just... You're being a lot right now. It wasn't the best car ride, but whatever, let's just not think about it. We're both in our flippy floppies, carrying our towels, sunscreen, and unbagged sandwiches, ready for a nice, relaxing day at the beach, only to walk up and see the worst possible thing that we could have ever seen possibly. No, it wasn't a beached whale or my ex-girlfriend. What we saw was a sign posted at the entrance that was only 3 words long. But those words were "No dogs allowed." Floof One was the only thing happy in that moment, unbeknownst to her that she was half the reason our trip was ruined. This sign won't stop me because I can't read! So, what did we do? Well, we ate our Sammies on a bench near a beach with our bitches, and we had nothing to wash it down with since we used our water to wash our hands and we couldn't drink from the ocean like we originally planned. And then we did what we in the business call give up. We drove back home empty-handed. Thankfully, both floofs were sacked out from the day, even though they did literally nothing other than push bodily chunks out from both ends. I love both of those dogs, but I'm not bringing them back to the beach ever again. Not like they're allowed, anyways. There's not a happy ending to this story. We were both very upset. But sometimes, our most memorable trips are the ones we spend with people we love. And sometimes, life's a beach.
Okay, class. Spell Wednesday. I don't know how to spell Wednesday. Well, James, just sound it out. Oh, okay. So, like this?
No, James, it's Wednesday.
You said sound it out, and that's how you sound it out.
Ha ha ha! You think you have it bad? Du is spelt with an X.
I think it comes to no surprise that I'm terrible at spelling. I feel like everyone in life falls into two categories. Either you're good at math and bad at reading, or you're weird. And if you've seen my other videos, you know that I'm a math boy. My mom told me that I have dyslexia because she has dyslexia and I have all the symptoms, but we never got that diagnosed by a doctor, so... You can't make me take my meds, Mom! A lot of times what I do to cover up the fact that I spell lower than a first grade level is I will purposely misspell words to the point where it's obviously a joke. You thought I was doing that to be funny, but it's actually because I have zero self-confidence in my spelling and I don't want anyone to point out my mistakes. I mentioned this in a different video, but in elementary school, I was put into an honors program and everyone had to take spelling tests a grade ahead of their level. And by everyone, I mean everyone except me, because I failed every single spelling test. So I had to take spelling tests that were on level. Ew. Every week when we took a spelling test, I would have to move to the back of the classroom, and the teacher would stand right next to me. She'd call out everyone else's word, which had like 8 syllables, like anti-disestablishmentarianism, and then she'd turn to me and give me my on-level word. James, your word is cat. Also, 1 year our class did a spelling bee, and everyone had to participate, and like, I didn't even care that I was the first one out.
Hey, that's almost my name.
Another thing that I mentioned in a pretty old video is that I used to have a speech impediment when I was little. I couldn't pronounce my ahs and I talked like this. I'm good now.
Obviously.
So every other day during school, I had to go to a speech therapy class, and one day the teacher who taught me how to pronounce my ahs, I'll call her Mrs. Kool-Aid, gave me this sheet of paper with a bunch of raindrops on it, and she said, "For every raindrop on this page, say the word raindrop." But then she just left the room, and I said, huh, well, I'm not going to do this. I didn't say Wayne drop a single time, because, like, no one was even there. No one would have seen me not saying Wayne drop. So why would I do something that I didn't want to do? But then the funny part is when she came back, she asked, "Are you finished saying your raindrops?"
No.
Well, how many did you say?
I didn't say any.
You stupid child. I told her the truth for some reason. I don't know why. It was probably the easiest lie in my life to get away with, but that's why I remember this story. I'm still mad at myself for telling the truth. And I had to say raindrop a bunch of times in front of her, and she would only go to the next raindrop until I said it right, and it was terrible. It really hurt my feelings. Since I was struggling with reading and spelling, I had to get an IEP. An incredible, excellent personality, which meant I had to go to a special class for a little bit during school, and the teacher who taught this class was none other than Mrs. Kool-Aid. Oh, yeah. I don't know why I said it like that. I don't remember anyone ever telling me I was put into a special needs class. I just remember going into speech therapy every other day, and then those classes slowly morphed into teaching me how to read and spell. I don't know, I thought reading this book would have helped me talk better. Two other kids were in the reading class with me, and I remember the day when reading for me just clicked. Us three were given a simple sentence to read. It was about bees. It was so simple. It was literally just, to defend their hive from wasps, bees don't sting the wasp. Instead, they all crowd around the wasp and flap their wings to raise their body temperature, heating up the wasp until it dies. And then Mrs. Kool-Aid asked us, okay, how do bees defend against wasps? And the other two kids said, they sting them. And I said, what? No, you moans! Didn't you weed this? The words in this paper have meaning when placed in a certain order to convey information. Also, I never want to get hugged by a bee. So I was in these classes all the way until the sixth grade. I was getting better at reading. I still wasn't great, but I was getting better at it. And one day, Mrs. Kool-Aid said, you know, James, you should try competing in the Battle of the Books.
Battle of the Books? Battle of the Books?
Battle of the Books!
Finally, reading sounds fun!
At my school, Battle of the Books was this competition where students were given a list of 4 books to read within a time limit of, like, 2 months. I don't remember how long it was. And after however many months it was, the contestants would sit in an auditorium and take turns answering questions about the books. And whoever got the most questions right would get a pizza party. And that's where the battle part comes in. We'd kill each other for pizza. And then there were 2 more rounds, each with 4 more books, so there was a total of 12 books you had to read. And we were allowed to be with a partner, so my partner was TJ.
Hey, TJ, do you remember Battle of the Books?
Yeah, man, it was great.
Now, you're probably thinking that 4 books in 2 months isn't that hard, especially since they're kids' books. But as someone who didn't read any books on my own outside of school, it was a challenge.
But I discovered a way to cheat the system. I discovered something called audiobooks.
Instead of having to sit still and read the book, I could just have someone read the book to me. And I would get through the book so much faster. I'd be able to read a book in about 8 hours as opposed to reading a book never, because I would never be able to finish a book on my own. And I was actually able to understand what was going on. I legitimately thought that listening to audiobooks was cheating because of how well it worked. So I never told anyone my secret. Until just now. Please don't tell anyone. Also, I didn't just turn on an audiobook and start playing video games. No, I sat in my bed next to the CD player and followed along with the book, and sometimes I even took notes. I've wanted to talk about my love for audiobooks for so long, but I can't, because then people will think I'm getting paid by a certain company, but I'm not, and I'll prove it. Instead of wasting your money on quality audiobooks made by professionals, you guys should all check out LibriVox.org, where you can listen to free public domain audiobooks, which means there's only old-timey classical books on it, like Aesop's Fables, which, in my opinion, is all you need. Anyway, TJ and I did the Battle of the Books, and for one of the rounds, TJ was sick, so I had to answer the questions all by myself, and I never forgave him for that. And also, the whole time, I was keeping track of everyone's points, and me and TJ got the most questions right. My math skills are finally being useful. I was already craving the pizza. After the last round, the teacher said, okay, I'll tally up all the points and let you all know who the winner is in a couple of weeks. But since I was keeping track of everyone's score, I already knew we won. I turned to TJ and I said, TJ, guess what? We already... Oh, this is the round that you were sick on. How did I not notice that until just now? But then a couple of weeks go by and I'm not hearing any news about a pizza party. I was expecting to walk into class one day and there would just be a pile of pizza boxes waiting for me. But that never happened. The teacher in charge of the competition was the librarian. So one day I went up to her and I asked, did you ever say who won the Battle of the Books? Also, my favorite pizza is barbecue chicken. And she said, oh, these 2 fifth graders won. So the Battle of the Books was for both 5th and 6th graders. I was a 6th grader, so I went to all the 6th grader battles. But apparently, there was some low-life 5th grader who got every single question right and stole my pizza party! And that taught me a valuable lesson. Even when you work hard, you don't always get what you want in life. But that's okay. Because one day...
You'll be an adult and you can buy all the pizza you want without having to read first!
You probably don't know this about me, but I am actually an Eagle Scout. And to be an Eagle Scout, you have to do scout stuff like go camping. And over the summer, my troop would like to travel to a place called Camp Geronimo, where we would live in the wilderness for 7 days. There are about 30 other scout troops that would come, and there were no cabins at the place. We had to sleep in tents. My first year at camp, my friend TJ and I just met the minimum age requirement to go. Yes, it was the same TJ from the first video. And being the good friends that we are, we decided to share a tent for the whole week. It's not weird. We were in the wilderness.
We shared for survival.
But we quickly learned that we weren't protecting ourselves from bears or anything. We were protecting ourselves from the older kids. You see, there is a perfect linear function based on your age versus how cool you were. And TJ and I were obviously not cool. So about 3 days into camp, someone thought it would be funny to take a can of Axe deodorant spray, tie down the button thing that sprays the axe, throw it in our tent, and then zip the tent flap shut. This horrendous act is actually a very common prank among Boy Scouts called axe bombing. Eventually, I had to go get something from the tent, so I opened the flap thing and... I was just hit with this wall of awful smells. You think boys like the smell of axe? Nah, that stuff's friggin' gross. I'd never experienced the heinous act of axe bombing in my whole life until then. But this wasn't how I wanted it to happen. I immediately got mad, like super pissed. I went up to TJ, grabbed him by the shoulder, looked directly into his perfect face and said, TJ, someone just axe bombed our tent. And TJ just shrugged and went, you know what? Whatever. There's no reason to get mad. It won't help us. And TJ's response to this has actually stuck with me. I think about what he said whenever I'm stressed out about homework, or if my computer crashes and I lose all my files. It really helps calm me down. But as a 12-year-old, I said, psh, okay, TJ, you do you. I'm gonna go get revenge. But I had no idea who actually axe-bombed our tent. And whoever did is still a mystery to this day. But I decided to blame the 15-year-olds, with their stupid, guilty faces. I even asked them just to be sure. Hey, did you axe-bomb my tent? No. Okay, I knew it was them. And the 15-year-olds were pretty cool, but not the coolest. There still were the oh-so-famous 16-year-olds. So to help prove that they were still cool, they built a mega-tent out of logs. And tent is probably an understatement for that thing. They had logs tied around trees, 5 walls, a back and a front door. It even had a log roof that some boys could stand on. And all the 15-year-olds slept under it every night. And I came up with a perfect plan to get my revenge. Sorry, I have to turn this into a 2-part thing. So anyway, thanks for watching. You can see 2 of my other videos that I've made, or a whole bunch of funny comics at my website. I mean, I'm not just gonna ask you to like, favorite, subscribe, and comment, but if you do wanna do that, you could.
You know how when people get into a new relationship, they go through a honeymoon phase? Well, me and my girlfriend went through a is-the-person-I'm-dating-a-deranged-murderer phase. When she first came over to my house, she thought my Nintendo figure collection was something only a psychopath would have. And she's right. When you've been living alone for so long, sometimes you just need to buy friends and put them on display. And sometimes you do this by turning people into lampshades or chairs. Luckily, I just collect hunky reptile figures. Gif doesn't actually think I'm a psychopath anymore, which is good, you know, because I don't want anyone to know the truth. However, early on in our relationship, there were some things I did that she didn't like. Like one time I was unloading the dishwasher and I was putting away the knives and Gif looked at me all concerned and I asked, what's the matter, huh? Huh? I don't know what made her run to the other side of the room like that when I could clearly just throw the knife at her. Yeah, she's kind of stupid. But she definitely got her point across that she didn't like me holding multiple knives and told me to cut it out. But I didn't know if she was a psychopath either though, because there are definitely some things about her that made me question her sanity. Like how she owns a $2,000 animal mascot costume, but she hates sports. That's weird. One time when I was over at her apartment, I was looking through her freezer, assuming she had bagel bites, and I asked, hey babe, where's all the bagel bites? And there was this plastic grocery bag in there, and she tells me, no, don't look in there! We don't have any bagel bites, you ate them all, remember? But in my mind, all I'm thinking is, hold on. What the frick does this chick have in her freezer that she doesn't want me to see? A freezer is not a place where you tell someone, don't look in there. You say that about underwear drawers and toilets. That's it. I don't know what we did for the next 10 minutes, because all I was thinking about was how many severed hands were in Gif's freezer. But then I thought, okay, maybe I'm overreacting. I optimistically asked, hey, babe, are you, perhaps keeping a surprise for me in the freezer? Like a birthday cake? My birthday's not for another 5 months, but that's the only thing I can think a person would hide in a freezer that wouldn't make them a psychopath. And she said, nope.
So what's in there?
Don't worry about it. Do you not see how this looks? If the doors weren't locked, I would have been out of there. I wasn't about to lose sleep over this, so I held up the knife I had from the previous joke and said, what's in the freezer? And she went, it's a dead snake. You had a dead snake next to the bagel bits! So fun fact about my GIF, she owns 8 snakes. Mm-hmm. Apparently she used to own 9. I've learned that snakes are a very low-maintenance pet. You only have to feed them once every 3 years, and if you cut them in half, they turn into 2 snakes. Yeah, so I have no clue how one of her snakes could have died. And another fun fact, snakes lack the part of the brain that feels love. They're physically incapable of showing affection. So your pet Hognose would sell your soul to Snake Satan for 1 dead mouse. So she already has 8 pets that don't love her, and potentially her boyfriend too if she doesn't get rid of that freezer snake. At least my reptiles aren't dead in a freezer. I immediately start asking questions. Why do you have a dead snake in your freezer? How many other dead animals are in your freezer? What the heck's wrong with you? And she said, I wanted to get him taxidermied, but the person I wanted to have do it was busy. Also, there's dead rats in there for my snakes. Oh, that explains why the bagel bites tasted so funny. What's extremely gross is that the snake is still in there to this day. I don't know how long the snake was in there before, but it's been well over a year since that incident. It's honestly great, though, because now she can never complain about the state of my refrigerator. I'll have potatoes that are sprouting more potatoes, grapes that are getting me tipsy, and if she points any of it out, I just respond with, oh, you think my refrigerator's disgusting? Yeah, Medusa? Uh-huh. One time she said, ah, my fridge smells terrible and I don't know why. Really? You can't think of a single reason? She said, no, I said the fridge smells bad, not the freezer. I said, I will flush your snake down the toilet and give you a swirly. Now that's the sign of true love, kids. But for all I know, she could totally still have severed hands in there. After dealing with the snakesicle situation, there's some other things I've learned from being in a relationship. Apparently, there are rules and etiquettes when eating food, and my girlfriend sure does love and enforce those rules. I was taught, don't put your elbows on the table, close your mouth when you're chewing unless you want to talk to someone, and make sure you eat something green every once in a while. But according to her, there's more than that. Like, did you know that bagel bites aren't a part of a balanced diet? We were at a restaurant one time, pre-COVID, and when we got our food, Gif took a napkin and put it on her lap and told me to do that as well because you're supposed to do that in a society. I looked around the restaurant and said, but no one else has a napkin on their laps. And she said, that's because you wanted to eat at a Denny's. I didn't know why she was such a stickler for table manners until I went to her family's place for Thanksgiving and I stepped inside and saw 2 sets of staircases in their house. And it all made sense. Oh. They're fancy and collect staircases. Going to my girlfriend's home for Thanksgiving was the first time I met a partner's parents, and I tried really, really hard to get them to like me because I'm kissing their firstborn child. I'm in the house. Dad's watching sports. I love sports, I lied. Mom's working on a puzzle. I love puzzles. They used to call me the puzzle king in high school. Her brother's playing Mario Odyssey. I love Mario. Oh, wait, I don't have to impress you. You suck at this game. In an effort to get them to like me more, I brought a gift for Gif's family. I got them a little baby cactus because it's small and prickly and doesn't like to be touched. Just like her. Ooh, ow, babe. No, no, babe. It was a joke. It was a joke, babe. I'm sorry. Gif's Thanksgiving meal was the polar opposite of my family's Thanksgiving. My family does Thanksgiving with 2 other families, and they all come together with mashed potatoes, and everyone gets in a line with paper plates, and we all have 1 big mashed potato potluck. Then I sit at the kids' table to avoid talking about politics. Gif's family used real plates and had candles, and everyone puts a napkin on their lap. I felt like Shrek at Fiona's castle. They had 3 forks of various sizes, but I still wanted them to like me, so I wasn't about to point out that it made no sense to use 3 different forks to eat a meal. This must be why Gif is so afraid of knives. All these cutlery options are bringing up childhood traumas of going up all the stairs. But Gif's family was so fancy that I actually didn't even meet them on Thanksgiving. My memory just filled in that we were having a Thanksgiving meal.
Giff read this script and was like, you know you didn't meet them on Thanksgiving, right? That was just a regular Tuesday brunch. That wasn't even a meal to be thankful for? Why'd we talk about politics so much? One of the big political debates we have is that Giff tells me I wear dad socks. But I don't think she understands my genius. You see, if I buy and wear the same pair of socks for the rest of my life, I'll never have to worry about matching socks ever again. So I've already picked out the socks that I'm going to be wearing at my funeral. And as we were wrapping up our non-thankful meal, I got up from the table, and Giff's dad said, "Hey, I have those socks." So I guess she's right about some things. And her dad totally likes me now. In the end, as long as I make Giff happy, then I know her parents will like me, no matter what socks I wear. And as long as you're with someone who makes you a happier person, then they're a good partner too. Even if they refuse to throw away the dead snake they've had in their freezer for almost 3 years.
The very first comic I drew was this fan-made Garfield comic that I did when I was like 9. This was the Garfield comic that came out when I was born. Okay, back to Twilight.
Hello?
James, we found it.
What did you find?
The Garfield comic, man!
So remember how I said the first comic I made was a Garfield comic? Of course you remember, I just showed you a clip of it. So apparently my mom kept it. That just amazes me. I need to call her, hold on.
Hello?
Hey, Mom, I just want to say that you have a hoarding problem. Like, seriously, you need to throw some stuff away once in a while. Okay, bye. Man, I love her. Did you know the creator of Garfield, Jim Davis, is 70 freaking years old? And he's still making Garfield? How do you even... And he's made 14,000 comics? Oh, he has co-artists, and he doesn't even draw them anymore. Well, I just lost a bit of respect for my hero. If you guys wanted to start reading Garfield, you have a lot of catching up to do. So you know I love Garfield, it was a big inspiration to me, so much so that the very first comic I ever made was about Garfield. And I know in the video I said that I made it when I was like 9, but looking back at this, I want to say that I was like 6 months old. It's that bad. So, everyone shut up, and without further ado, this is the very first comic I made. Okay, let me explain some stuff. Let's go over this panel by panel. See how there's a graphic in this corner here? Well, Jim would make a unique graphic on every Sunday comic. So this is a Sunday comic, everyone. That means it's in color. Orange is a color. So the first panel, there's Odie, Garfield, and John. And John is saying, "Happy birthday! It's Garfield's birthday!" And they're about to eat this physically impossible-looking cake. So there's this running joke in the Garfield comic that Garfield hates his birthday because he's getting way older. He's in his late 30s now! Jeez! So keep that in mind, because in the next panel... Wah! You might not be able to tell from the comic, but that's the sound of a fire truck pulling up. Because in panel number 3, there's firefighters saying, "Where's the fire?" And you know they're firefighters because this guy's holding a fire hose. That's a hose, okay? I was 6, you perverts! I just want to point out that I spelled fire like how it should be spelled. F-I-R. Really, this is the wrong way if you think about it. Fiery. In case you didn't get the joke, there's so many candles on Garfield's cake that it was enough to warrant a visit from the firemen, because Garfield is so old and he just has a bunch of candles on his cake. And then in the next panel, John explains to the fireman that there was nothing to worry about. My cat just having a B-day. Garfield's still confused, though. And then in the next panel, the cake is falling apart as we speak, and we hear another sound effect. It's beep, beep. Now, if we follow the speech bubble, we can clearly see that the sound is coming from the ceiling. John already knows what's happening because he says, "Oh no." And then in a brand new color, blue, it starts raining on them. It was the sprinkler from above. John runs away going, "Ah!" You know, something similar happened with sprinklers in the Incredibles movie. Oh shoot, I gotta call it The Incredibles 1 in case you're watching this after June 2019. So if I got inspiration from The Incredibles 1, which came out in 2004, that would mean I would be a minimum of 8 years old. So maybe I did make this comic when I was 9. That is, I'm assuming I stole that joke from the Incredibles movie, which I wouldn't put past myself. Alright guys, what if I told you there was a second Garfield comic that I made? I'm a little hesitant to show you because, I don't know what's going on in this one. So let's look at it and see if we can figure it out together. So it starts with a Garfield graphic. It's another Sunday comic. It doesn't seem as excited as the other one though. Then in panel 1 we see... What is that? I think that's a toothbrush and that's toothpaste. And it says Teth on it. Okay, panel 2. John walks up to said Teth brush and Teth paste. And then he says, "They say you should use to pee big toothpaste."
I was in honor classes, you know. Then it looks like he's about to brush his teeth with a massive teeth brush. And then, Garfield, that's not... pieces. And then, I don't even know. I don't know what that is. And then, there's two? And one's green? And then we see Garfield say, yes, it is. So, like I said, I don't know what this one's about. I don't know what the joke is. I just don't get it. So I will make you an offer. I will give $20 to anyone that explains what this comic is trying to do. Actually, let's make it a prime $23. So $23 to anyone who can decipher this. I will be taking your guesses on Twitter and in the YouTube comments, and I will give out the $23 to whichever explanation I think explains the comic the best. So not necessarily the first person to get it will get the $23, just whichever one I see first.
Yeah, I'm not really sure you should do a video about Arizona. I mean, only people from Arizona will think it's funny. I'm gonna do it anyway. So if you saw my Bashes video, which I think was the fifth one in the French Trip series, you'll know that I live in Arizona. So cool, I'm gonna talk about it. Pros and cons of living in Arizona. Pro. We got cacti. And in fact, we, and a tiny bit of Mexico, are the only place in the world with saguaro cactuses. I mean cacti. Boom. And as an extra bonus, they look really funny with Christmas decorations on them. Con. Not a lot of trees. Which I mean... who needs trees? They just stand there. All they do is provide shade and oxygen. I guess you could climb them. I don't need that. Instead of trees, we have these things. Pro, we have In-N-Out. Okay, that store technically originated in California, but it's moved to here, and it's delicious. I actually applied there, and I got an interview. They didn't hire me, though. You guys are missing Con, the heat. It's unbearable. In the summer, you can expect the weather to be in triple digits. We don't have to be told not to leave our dog or babies inside cars, because we're already dying of heat stroke while the air conditioning is on. Pro, we don't have daylight savings. Which might seem like a good thing, but the only reason we don't is because con, the sun is trying to kill you. Yes, it's hot here. Pro, it's... I think we got the Grand Canyon, which is like one of the seven wonders of the world, I guess. And it can be seen from the Great Wall of China. I'm just kidding, that's not true. Oh, I got it. Pro. Citrus. We grow oranges, lemons, and grapefruits. They only get ripe in the winter, though. These are actually part of the three C's of Arizona. We have citrus, copper, cats, cacti, and cattle. And calcium, because of all the sunshine we're getting. Con. It hardly rains here. Yes, that's a bad thing, because I never learned how to close an umbrella. Okay, that's an exaggeration. Of course I know how to close an umbrella, but it was a very hard learning curve. And Arizona was not built to get rained on. When we do get rain, streets flood, schools close, and trees, well, these kinds of trees, fall. Pro. So, yeah, the summer can be unbearable, but winter is a total breeze. Winter is when the weather is perfect. While everyone else has to deal with stuff like this, here all we get is ripe lemons perfect for making cold lemonade with. And because our winters are so not really wintry, we have a bunch of old people who move down here in the winter and then move back to their summer home in Minnesota or whatever. They're like birds who migrate south in the winter, but like snowbirds, which is coincidentally what we call them. So really it's sort of a pro/con. On one side, we have tolerable weather, but on the other side, old people. You know, I can't really think of any more pros, so we're just gonna say more cons. Apparently, Phoenix was ranked number 10 on the rudest cities in America, which, okay, how do you measure a city's rudeness level? Was the person making this list, like, seeking out rude people and comparing them to other cities? Like, oh, this person in Phoenix called me a piece of shit, but this person in Wyoming only called me a piece of crap. So, I guess Phoenix just has more rude people. Add it to the list. And also on the same list, we apparently had some of the worst drivers around, which I can sort of see because everyone here drives 7 to 15 miles over the speed limit. But I really hate slow drivers, so it's kind of a pro for me, but I guess it's a con. Also, did you guys know that a haboob is another name for a dust storm? And I know this because we've had to use that word before. And because we call them that, dust storms become 20 times more awesome. In fact, we're probably excited to see haboobs just so we can make jokes about them. As soon as we see a cloud of dust on the horizon, we all go, ah, guys, it's a haboob! You guys remember us? This is what we call it. And then we go inside and make jokes like, oh man, this is one massive haboob. And lastly, probably the worst con of all, the heat. I know I already mentioned it 3 times, but I don't think I've really driven my point home here. It's so hot here. I am literally sweating right now as I'm recording this, and that's not on the script.
Please get me out.
And some of you watching are probably like, but James, it's a dry heat, right? That means it's not as bad. Let me answer that question with another question, and then an answer. Do you know what else a dry heat is? Ovens. And volcanoes. And that's where I live.
Did you know that 99% of everything I've ever said on this channel has been written out ahead of time, including the mispronunciation of the word percent? It would be 100% scripted, but, you know, the drawing challenge videos, you can't really script that kind of content, so... Or can you? But every other video has had a script, and that includes the worst video I've ever made, my very first one.
So you know those books you make in a...
I'm gonna stop it right there because I physically cannot watch another nanosecond of my first video. I want to take it down so bad, but I'm keeping it up so you can see how much I've improved. Because like it or not, the very first thing you make of something is going to be bad. But you have to make the bad thing first so you know how to make things good. The point is, even that sad excuse of a video was scripted, and today I want to talk about what goes on in the script writing process and how I get inspiration and some tips for writing better scripts, because if I write something I'm not 100% happy with, then I'm stuck working on a crappy video for the next month, like this one. People often tell me, oh, I want to make YouTube videos, but my life's super boring. I wish I could have an exciting life like yours. And I always respond with, my most popular series is about me talking about working at a minimum wage small local sandwich shop. A script does not need to be an edge of your seat high stakes level story. It needs to be an entertaining story. And I believe if told in a certain way, any story can be an entertaining story. The first piece of advice that I can give that will immediately improve your scripts is, drumroll please, in 5, 4, 3, getting to the point. Because I do animation, the longer the script I make, the longer the video will be, and the longer my team and I will have to spend working on the video and the more depressed I'll get. So I've subconsciously gotten into the habit of writing shorter scripts that get to the point and cut out unnecessary and unfunny details. I feel like the American school system has brainwashed kids into thinking that the best way to express ideas is through the form of a 5-paragraph essay. Now, have you ever read a 5-paragraph essay that you wrote? They're boring as shit, and most schools require essays to have a minimum word count, so we are now training the next generation into purposely writing long-winded and wordy thoughts that could have been shortened down to a sentence. You've all written essays. You know all about repeating ideas you've already written, or saying the same thing over and over, or reiterating thoughts more than once, or echoing points an overabundant amount of times, or looking up words on thesaurus.com to hit that 500 minimum word count before. Well, you may not be ready to hear this, but you will not need to write 5-paragraph essays in your daily life. Shakespeare knew about this when in the 1300s he wrote, "Brevity is the soul of wit." Which is ironic, because he really liked to use a lot of unnecessary words. I once clicked on a video that was titled something like, "Top 10 Scary Things That Have Happened When Hiking" or something. And I thought, yeah, that sounds like a good video to watch at 3 in the morning. And I swear, the video started out like,
"Whether it's to have a healthier lifestyle or to see the great outdoors, hiking is a wonderful activity enjoyed by millions of people across the globe of America. But sometimes, this wonderful activity enjoyed by billions can sometimes turn deadly."
Why are you defining what a hike is? We all know! Just show me the blurry photos of Bigfoot already until I'm too scared to fall asleep! So, how do I come up with these video ideas? Well, I start by thinking, what can I rant about for hours? Something that makes me go, "Don't get me started on blank!" And then I do get started and I write those thoughts on a Google Doc. And sometimes my thoughts are jumbled and incoherent, like I've been up all night watching Bigfoot videos, but I don't care. I just need to get these thoughts out of my head and splattered onto a piece of paper. And sometimes just starting to write will make me think of new ideas and I go, "And another thing!" And I repeat that process until the script's done. And then when I'm done writing the script, it's actually Not even close to being done. Once I've finished writing, I send the script off to some of my friends and the Amazing, and they look over it with the freshest of eyes, and they'll give me notes saying, hey, you misspelled percent here, or hey, I have a joke you can add, or hey, wait, James, I thought I was your friend. And then I'll choose which of their jokes is the funniest and that I'm going to steal. Here's a fun little YouTuber behind-the-scenes fact. Since 2018, there's a circle of friends I have where we all trade and read each other's scripts and make suggestions and pitch jokes. And once I'm done reading someone else's script, I get to watch their finished video a month or two or 8 months later and see if the jokes I pitched made the cut. And then I get to smile to myself because no one knows that I was the one who wrote that joke because none of us credit each other because none of us care. Literally, the last 30 seconds of my Suobwe Part 4 video was written by this kid named Infamous Swoosh. I wrote in my script, conclusion goes here. And he just wrote one for me, and I went, yeah, I'll use that. And not credit you. But it's okay, because we all don't credit each other equally, so it's a win-win. Everyone in the friend circle gets to look funnier than they actually are. Some days, I'll stumble onto a topic that I just know I'm going to make a video about, and then the scripts are a breeze to write. But then there are some days where I'm content with the world and I got nothing that gets me started. But I can't just not make a script that month, otherwise what would I make a video about? Random thoughts? I still gotta put bread on the table, and also my team would be out of a job. So on those days, you're basically forcing yourself to be creative on demand, which is not the easiest thing to do. But fortunately, I have a few tricks to get the creative juices flowing. It's called drugs. I'm just kidding. It's called Adderall. Wait. Okay, but for real, I do have this really complicated technique to get ideas, so write these steps down, okay? What I do is I get a pen and a notebook, put on some lo-fi, and just write. About nothing specific, just whatever my brain thinks is important. I am writing right now, with my left hand. Most people are right-handed, but I am special and am left-handed. I'm glad my teachers didn't force me to be right-handed. They were more concerned about my messy handwriting and horrible spelling. Usually the ideas don't come that quickly, but you get what I'm talking about. So many times at conventions, I'll be on a panel and people will ask for advice about starting a YouTube channel, and everyone on the panel will say, if you want to start a YouTube channel, you just gotta do it. You know, hit the upload button a couple of times. And I feel kind of bad for people who traveled far and wide to a convention and paid for a hotel and waited in line just to hear a bunch of YouTubers say, you just gotta do it. And it sounds cliche, but it's true. We either say that or be more entertaining, and that's rude, so. Recently, I went on tour performing a live show called Scribble Showdown. I'll talk more about it in the next video, don't worry. And before every show, we had a Q&A panel, and the most frequent question we got asked was, can you read my screenplay, and how do you get motivation? And the answer to that question is, no, and you don't. You get disciplined. Discipline comes before motivation. If you have a project you want to start or a skill you want to learn, you can't wait around for motivation to hit. Sometimes it doesn't come. Instead, you have to set a schedule where you say, okay, on this day, from this time to this time, I'm going to put in the effort to achieve my goal. And if you don't know where to start, a good first step would be to just get your goals into writing. Get your thoughts out onto something physical. So grab a pen and a piece of paper and just ask your friends to read your screenplay because I'm too busy. So busy that I didn't even have time to record an end card.
So me and TJ had to sleep a whole night in the axe-smelling tent. Every breath I could taste the smell. And I just got more and more angry. The night finally passed, and I woke up early in the morning before everyone else, so I could start with my master revenge plan. Was I tired? Maybe. But that's a sacrifice you have to make for vengeance. Every campsite had a water fountain coming out of the ground, connected to a PVC pipe. I found the biggest Ziploc freezer bag I could find and started to fill it up with water. It was obviously a slow process. I had plenty of time to reconsider, to think about what TJ said or what would happen after I got my revenge. But nothing stopped me. I was a squeaky-voiced, hormone-induced monster. Once the bag was full, I went back to my tent and woke TJ up. He got up and I told him to watch this. TJ actually had no part in the revenge plan. I just wanted to suck him down with me. I think TJ actually didn't want to get revenge. I ran towards the mega log tent and hid behind a real tent that was right next to the log one. Everyone was still inside. TJ still had no clue what I was doing. Until I chucked the bag over the real tent. If everything went according to plan, the bag would break on the roof and the water would sink through the openings, and then they'd be super wet, LOL. That was the plan. I never saw the carnage my creation had done. I was worried that I'd completely miss the log tent. I never played any sports as a kid, so just making it over the first tent would have been an accomplishment. But the fact that everyone started screaming and one boy yelled, "Micah, I'm gonna kill you!" I knew it must have been the most perfect shot. Did I stay around and laugh at their stupid, guilty faces? No. Me and TJ ran away as fast as we possibly could, without looking back. We sprinted off into the woods before any 15-year-old saw us. We just kept running and running, making sure to get as far away from camp as possible. And on the way, I kinda threw up a little. TJ, being the good friend that he was, thought I was unfit to run, so he decided that we should hide in some bushes. After about 5 minutes, nobody came. "Should we head back to camp?" "No." "Yeah, you're right." So we kept running, until we found the lake where scouts could canoe in. Me and TJ both thought this was a good place to stop, so we sat by the lake and talked for a few hours. Because in a week, TJ and his family were going to move away to China for 2 years, and I knew I wouldn't see him again for a long time, so I wanted to spend every moment I had with him. We were just a couple of bros being real with each other, skipping rocks and talking about our feelings. And then that night, the 15-year-old's tent got axe-bombed. So I guess it wasn't them. Oh, and remember how I threw up after running so much? Well, apparently there was a sickness going around camp that all the camp instructors got, and about 50% of the scouts got it too. And lo and behold, one of the 15-year-olds wasn't feeling so well when he went to bed that night. And then the sudden jolt awake and the cold water made him throw up. Yay.
Jeff, you have the board. I'll take random James trivia for 400, Alex. This was James's first career choice before his YouTube channel kicked off. Oh, I know this one. What is a male prostitute? Okay, that bit's done now. Male prostitute was never a career goal. Well, I mean, it's not completely off the table. You never know how YouTube will turn out. If you didn't know this Odd Ones Out trivia, I wanted to be a math teacher when I grew up. My dream job was actually a cartoonist. But since me and my parents didn't think I'd be able to make any money drawing pictures, I chose a math teacher as my "I'll settle for this" job. I mean, I like math, so I wouldn't have hated being a math teacher. And I'm also probably good at teaching children. I haven't checked, though, but how hard can it be? Listen, kids, I have 2.7 million subs on YouTube, so if you want a shout-out, you'll have to do the homework. And I thought that a teaching job would give me enough free time to doodle cartoons, so being a math teacher would have been perfect. But oh boy, that did not turn out how I expected. If for some reason my channel died and I stopped making YouTube videos, I would probably go back to school and finish my math education major. And then I'd be teaching a class, and then one of my students would find out that I used to do YouTube, and then they'd say, "Mr. James, are you the Odd Ones Out?"
The Odd Ones Out? I haven't heard that name in years.
You shouldn't smoke in front of children, Mr. James. I just want to point this out. In my peeing video, I drew my first grade teacher like this, and in my Harry the Moth video, I drew my kindergarten teacher like this. Do you have an explanation on why they're drawn so similar?
Yeah, I was lazy.
Teachers play such an important role for children, and if I'm being honest, I don't think they get paid enough to take their job seriously. A good teacher can make you excited to learn the material and actually teach you, while a bad teacher can not only waste your time and not teach you anything, but also crush your dreams. I took choir in 9th grade. Everyone had to take it, okay? It was a prep school. I'm not weird. And one time while we were singing a song, the teacher said, "Stop! Who's flat?" Then she pointed at a boy and told him, "You, sing." And he sang for a bit. Then she pointed at another boy, "You, sing." Then she went through a couple more, and then she pointed to me and said, "You, sing." And I sung, "Stop! James, during the next song, don't sing." Either she had really good hearing, or I was just that terrible at singing. Now, I really hated choir, so if given the choice to sing or not sing, I would choose not every time. But what if I actually wanted to be a singer, and when I sang just then, I was trying my hardest? That would have been soul-crushing. I would have given up on music right then and there. Thankfully, my art teacher was a lot more laid back. She definitely had favorite students, and I wasn't one of them, but she never told anyone not to draw. One time, I showed my art teacher my newest comic, which at the time was this one. And without telling her that I was the one who made it, I asked, "What do you think of this art style?" And she said, "Oh, I hate it, but it's fine if you like it. In my classroom, we try to go for realism, but people with that art style can still have successful careers."
She said she hated it.
Teachers just need to be more supportive with students and teach them in creative ways. That's why I think so many people hate math. You just haven't had a teacher that made you want to learn.
You'd pay attention and study for the tests if I was your math teacher. Wouldn't you?
Don't get me wrong, teaching isn't an easy job. And even the best teacher can't make everyone in their class excited to learn. I mean, I probably could, but there's definitely a difference between a good and bad teacher. I had this French teacher in 9th grade, and she made me really hate French, and by association, the entire country of France. She spoke English on the first day of class, and then only spoke French for the rest of the year. We were in French 1, by the way. I didn't understand anything that was going on. I would just tune her out. I'd be doodling on a piece of paper, and then people would get out their textbooks and start flipping through it, and then I'd think, "Oh, we're doing this now?" I didn't learn anything in that class. Honestly, I barely know any French. This is all the French words that I know. I can count to 10. Ou, du, trois, carte, cinq, six, sept, huit, neuf. Okay, I can only count to 9. And I know that Eiffel Tower is Tour Eiffel, quack is coin, and door is portal. My twin sister, who was in the same class and had the same living conditions as me, turned out a lot different. She learned a lot of French and continued to take classes after 9th grade. So maybe this whole knowledge thing has a lot to do with the student and not the teacher. Nah, it's the teacher's fault. Did anyone else, when you were little, think that your teacher lived at the school? Because I remember one time my kindergarten teacher came to school in her pajamas and told us that she lived at the school. And that made perfect sense. Yeah, this is your home. This is the only place they ever see you. Therefore, you live here.
Man, I wish I could work in my pajamas.
When I went to community college, I had a math teacher who was this old grandpa, and on the first day, he told us that he never missed a class in 20 years. But then, the very next day, he didn't show up. Now, in college, teachers not showing up to class is pretty normal. Or at least it was in the colleges I went to. It happened more times than it did in high school, that's for sure. That's something to look forward to, seniors. Every time it does happen, there's always that one kid who will say, "You know, there's a rule that if the teacher doesn't show up within the first 15 minutes of class, then you can leave." I don't know if that rule is true, but I'm not going to look it up. Because I like that rule, and I want it to be true. And I don't even go to college anymore, so why does it matter? So teachers not showing up, that's not too abnormal, but since this old guy told us he never missed a day of class in 20 years, we thought he died. But nope, he just missed a day. He showed up the third day. I don't know what his excuse was, because after I saw him, I thought, "Oh good, he's alive." And then I stopped paying attention, because community college sucks. I'd say that my favorite teacher would be my 11th grade AP US history teacher. I liked him because it was obvious that he liked the material, and he would teach us in a way that was fun and interesting. He was also a more laid back and generally a funny person. He's the teacher that I want to be. He gave me a compliment once that has always stuck with me. He was telling the class about the AP test, which is the super important open-ended essay test that we took at the end of the year, and if we did well on it, the grade would count for college credit. So like a week before the test, our teacher was preparing us, and he said, "Guys, don't try and be funny on the AP test. The graders don't have a sense of humor. Except James. James can be funny on the test." Aww, that compliment made me so happy and confident. I don't know how serious my teacher was when he said that, and he probably doesn't even remember saying it, but I really appreciated it. I ended up getting a 3 on the test, which is only partial credit in select colleges, so maybe I'm not funny. That was 11th grade. In 12th, I took all AP classes, but I didn't take any of the AP tests. I was too apathetic. But I turned out fine. Actually, no. My favorite teacher is my 9th grade English teacher, who emailed me and said he watches my videos. "Hi, Mr. Batman. Sorry I plagiarized the Berlin Wall essay. I really wanted to talk about my 9th grade poetry teacher. Yes, I took choir, French, and poetry all in 9th grade. It was a preparatory school. That teacher was definitely something, but this video is getting too long, so I'll have to make a part 2.
Let's pretend you get on a bus and it's super crowded. The only spot that's open is between 2 strangers. So you sit down between 2 people you never met and everyone is fine. Everyone's keeping to themselves, no one's making eye contact, it's perfect. Sure, your shoulders are touching, but that's just what happens. That's part of the bus going experience, you poor person. But then at the very next stop, aisle seat guy gets off. So now you and window seat guy are sitting right next to each other. But since you're in the middle, you have to be the one to decide, do you move or not? I honestly don't know what the right thing to do in that situation is. I'm conflicted. Because if you move, it would be silently telling the other person, hey, you're disgusting. I can't stand having our shoulders touch any longer, and I'm glad to finally get away from you. Ugh. But on the other hand, if I was the window seat guy, I would want the middle seat guy to become the new aisle seat guy. I wouldn't see moving as rude. I would just want his gross, disgusting body as far away from me as possible. That's not rude. But on the other hand, maybe I'm overthinking everything and most people don't even mind being this close to another human and they aren't struggling socially, I don't know. Now imagine that same situation, but with urinals. If you're in the middle urinal, do you move halfway through to the other urinal? Because I would. Are you supposed to talk to people when you're sitting 2 inches away from them? I always felt like I should say something, like, hey, did you see the game last night? I didn't, I was too busy drawing cartoons. But I realized that this is a two-way street. I'm worried about not talking to someone, but they're not talking to me either. We both agreed that there's this unwritten contract between us that we're not even going to look at each other. It got me thinking about strangers and specifically how I treat them. And how I can make money off of them, hey-o! I'm just kidding, that was a joke. For most of my life, I would go out of my way to avoid talking to people. I would stay in my lane, mind my own business, no eye contact. If everyone's using a urinal, I'd have to pee tomorrow. Yes, I'm lonely. But now that YouTube's the thing, I'm interacting with strangers more often than I've had to in my entire life. So I've been thinking a lot about strangers. And first of all, I think the word stranger is already an insulting label for someone just because you don't know their name. Oh, I don't know this person. They're a stranger. They're strange. I'm the normal one. They're the freaks. They probably murder people with an axe. That's always the go-to profession of a stranger, an axe murderer. But the people you see throughout your day are all humans with their own hopes and dreams, and some of them may hope to kill you, but you'll never know because you didn't ever take the time to get to know them. So I think that the people you see throughout your daily life aren't strangers. They're potential friends. Except for the weird ones, obviously. Stay away from them. And yes, I'm telling you to judge people based on their appearance. They're the ones that chose to wear anime shirts in public, okay? So back to the bus scenario. I'm sitting right next to this fellow human being. So far, there's not a single reason why I should dislike this person. But I don't know why, if you put him and me on a bus next to each other, I want him as far away from me as possible. Just stop touching my shoulder! So that was the last time I took the bus. Unfortunately, that's not the only place you meet strangers. One time I was at Home Depot and I was looking for jumper cables and I couldn't find them anywhere. And I don't know if I'm the only human that's like this, but I will try everything in my power to not talk to a sales associate. I guess it's because I know they get paid minimum wage and their life sucks and I just want to leave them alone and not make their job any harder than it has to be. But asking employees for help isn't even bothering them that much. In fact, I think it's part of their job? Like, what's the worst thing they're going to say? Ugh! You don't know where one specific item is? Everyone else knows. Did you even look? They're in the jumper cable aisle, idiot. No one's gonna think that. So feeling desperate, I mustered up what little courage I had and swaggered up to someone wearing an orange vest and said, excuse me, do you know where the jumper cables are? I don't work here. Oh, you don't work here? And then he walked away. And then he waddled away, waddle, waddle. And then the very next day, bum, bum, bum. So I think the logical thing to do in that situation would have been to find someone who does work there. But I left the store because I didn't want to run into that same guy again. But I also bought a hammer because I didn't want people to think that I stole something. So... oh yeah. And by the way, if you wear an orange vest to Home Depot, just expect people to ask you for help. Same goes for people who wear red shirts at Target.
You'd think I'd learn from my mistakes, but no, I have a bunch more examples. When my book came out, my publisher said that it was going to be carried at Barnes & Noble, and I thought that was super duper cool and wanted to see my book in the wild. Not to buy or anything, just to have a look at. So I took my friend Adam from Something Else YT, and we went to the local Barnes & Noble and started our search. We looked in the humor section, didn't find it. Then we checked the new release section, it wasn't there either. Then we looked at the best-selling section, then the religious section, but we couldn't find the book anywhere. So either the publisher lied, or they had already sold out. But just to be sure, I asked one of the workers, "Hey, do you guys have a book by The Odd Ones Out? He kind of looks like this." And the worker typed something out on his computer and said, "Oh yeah, we got those in the back. We just haven't put them out yet." So then he went to the back room, brought out a copy and handed it to me saying, "Here you go, kid." And I thought, well, frick. I can't just hand it back to the guy and say, "Oh no, that's okay. I didn't want to buy it. I just wanted to have a look at it." Do you know how inconvenient that would be? So the only less awkward option I could think of was to buy my own book. And you know what? I'd get a couple cents back from this purchase, so it wouldn't have been a total loss. But Adam, being the more sensible one, said,
"Dude, this is ridiculous. You have to come clean."
So then he went to the worker and said,
"So he actually wrote this book? He just wanted to get a look at it, like, in the wild."
And the worker said, "Oh, that's so cool. Do you want to sign our copies?" And then I thought, well, hold on. You're not even going to ask me for my ID? How do you know I actually wrote this book and I'm not some guy trying to deface someone else's? And then the guy gave me a whole stack of my books and I signed them all. Last story before I go. I was in the hallway of a building and me and this potential friend crossed paths. He said, "Hello." And I was going to respond with, "Hello," and "How's it going?" But I combined the two and ended up saying, "How?" And then I jumped out a window and fell to my death. I can't rationalize that behavior. Maybe I spend too much time on the computer and I'm not used to looking at real people's faces, but I'm trying to change. Don't get me wrong, going to conventions and meeting fans has helped me a lot with talking to people. Granted, those conversations are usually one-sided and a real stranger won't already know who I am, but they've still helped me. Now, you might be expecting me to give you advice on overcoming social anxiety, but if you watch this video, you know I'm not the most qualified to give that advice, but I'll try my best. I know it's hard to feel confident, and I'm still working on it, but you have to understand that we're all people, and we all have things that we're struggling with. And in reality, we're not all watching or caring about every little thing that other people do. We're all too busy worrying about what other people think of us. So with enough practice and believing in yourself, you can show the world your true colors, and I think you'll find that people are a lot nicer than you think. So if you're the middle seat guy on the bus, and you have to decide whether or not to move, do whatever you want. No one cares. Just stop touching my shoulders.
Boys and girls, come hear my greeting. I hope you don't plan on sleeping. Tonight, for while you are dreaming, evil awakes, unearthed and creeping. There's things that thump, things that bite, things that go bump in the night. What are these things you sit and ponder? Brace yourselves. We call them monsters.
What? He's going to tell us about monsters, but they're not going to be that scary.
Silence, you dirty apparition! Don't you see the danger you are in? For what I speak is 100% real. Don't believe me? Just ask my pet eel. This guy is nuts.
What? I'm not an apparition. I'm a ghoul.
The first monster we'll see today is something that, likes to eat hay. First they champ, then they stamp, then... Okay, I can't speak in rhymes for the whole thing. I have a question for you guys. Are you familiar with the term furry?
What?
Well, after doing research on these monsters, I don't think furry is a new concept. Humans, for whatever reason, have always been obsessed with personifying animals. And who can blame them? Look how cute these guys are. Now, a lot of these monsters follow a similar pattern. So if you ever wanted to Frankenstein up a monster, all you have to do is take two already existing animals, one of them being preferably a human, and then you just gotta put them together. You all know about mermaids. One part sexy, the other half is just some lady. Well, do you know about this even scarier combination? It's called a hippo. Campus. Half hippo, half college. They say after 4 stressful years, he accumulates $100,000 of debt and no one in his field is hiring. Oh, I'm just messing with you guys. Okay, but for real, a hippocampus is a half fish, half horse.
Oh, like the Neopet.
What? Yeah, Fiopian. I had one when I was like 2. I used my Christmas paintbrush on it. You guys aren't scared of a literal seahorse? Well, how does it kill people? Like, can it turn them into stone? No, but the Scandinavians have a version called the Kelpie that tricks humans into riding them, and then it drowns the humans. Probably should have started with that one. That's okay, I guess. All right, Edward, if a murderous horse doesn't put you on edge, then how about this? A monopod. Yeah, that's right, it looks just like a regular person, but it only has one leg. Whoa, are you calling amputees monsters? No, this amputee has one giant leg. And by the way, these guys date back all the way to 400 BC, way before the first amputee ever existed. Also, despite them only having one leg, they're supposedly very fast, so imagine this guy aggressively chasing you at midnight. Yeah, I'm sure you'd piss your pants too. What about this? A Blemmy. Again, looks like a regular person, but oh wait, where's its head? I don't see it anywhere. Ow, it's on its chest, like some kind of Pokemon. Come on, does this not terrify you? How would you give this guy a hug without suffocating him? My dad doesn't have a head. Also, he rides a horse, so this is all a pretty normal Tuesday for me. Alright, it's fine that you're not scared, because I've been saving the best monsters for last. Everyone, meet the Serpuppard. It has the body of a lion, the head of a lion, but the neck of a snake. Ugh, it's so gross. Why would anything need that long of a neck? So it can talk to giraffes? Imagine if it could retract its neck, and then you just think it's a normal old lion and say, hey, that's pretty scary, but at least it's 20 feet away from me, and then its head would just extend out of its body and then bite your head off. Speaking of snake-based creatures, what is the second most mischievous animal? Answer, the snake. Snakes represent Slytherin from Harry Potter, and those guys are always up to something, and snakes were responsible for the fall of man. But do you know what the number one most mischievous animal is? Answer, the fox. He's been in a ton of fables. He's a master hustler. So the fox and the snake are two of the most mischievous animals. But what if they had a baby together? Well, take a look at this monster from Chile called the... I can't say it. The Jirivulu, there we go. It's a half fox, half snake, and it has a claw for a tail, and it also creates whirlpools to drown people. Now this would be a really cool monster if it wasn't so terrifying. You know what? I got even more snake-based monsters to show you. Take a look at the Amphisbaena.
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 That's how they write. It's a half snake, half snake, but the same half. It's a snake with two heads on both ends for double biting action. I think it'd be cool if there was a creature that was the snake's tail on both sides. That'd be so useless. Oh wait, that's just an oversized worm. How would either one of them poop? Great question. I honestly don't know how a real snake poops. And the last snake-based monster I'm going to show you is called the Chelalita longicollis. That's its Latin name. Its real name is the snake-neck turtle. It's a lot like the Serpuppard with its long neck, but instead a turtle. But I doubt you'll have to worry about these things. There's no way these abominations can be real. No, those are real. Huh? They're indigenous to Australia. I saw one at the zoo with my dad. There's no way these things can be real. No, they're definitely real. But do you know what isn't real? All of us. None of us are real, James. Why do you think we all have the same voice? You're talking to yourself again. It's been 3 weeks since the accident. You need to snap out of it. What are you guys talking about? You're totally real. So, did I scare you? Huh? You guys scared? Hey, you! Knock it off in there.
Guys, I have a brilliant idea. What if we do the In My Feelings Challenge? What do you think?
What's the In My Feelings Challenge?
It was that dance people did outside of their moving cars in 2018.
That's stupid.
I know! It's weird to me that YouTube Rewind 2018 came out over 5 years ago, which makes it old enough to be something to reminisce about. There's a fresh generation of iPad kids who don't get to experience the yearly tradition of coming together as a community and watching the newest YouTube Rewind, and absolutely hating it. In case you all forgot, the website YouTube.com used to make these celebratory videos showcasing all the important events and memes that had happened throughout the year. And all these YouTubers would get together and do a silly little dance, and everyone had a grand old time. And since these videos were produced by the very platform you're currently watching this on, Rewinds would always receive a lot of attention. Now, according to my memory, YouTube Rewinds were pretty well received. At first. But you see, as time went on, the general public and the YouTubers involved started to grow weary. People were throwing around words like cringe, and this isn't what YouTube represents, and that's that. And it all accumulated to YouTube's magnum opus, YouTube Rewind 2018. Everyone controls Rewind. Hashtag YouTube Rewind, which is a video that was so universally hated that it holds the world record for most disliked video ever. A record it will now hold perpetually because of the whole dislike thing. The audience wasn't happy, the YouTubers involved weren't happy, until finally YouTube snapped and was like, alright, fine, if no one wants it, we'll stop doing it! We were just doing this as a favor anyways! And so, YouTube discontinued the Rewind project indefinitely, with 2018 being the last time we ever got a Rewind.
What about me, James?
How dare you even consider yourself worthy of being called a Rewind 2019? A top 10 video? Really? At least 2011 had Rebecca Black hosting. Leave 2019 before I tell you the top 10 ways on how I'm gonna hurt you! So getting back to the actual last YouTube Rewind, you know, the one with the most dislikes in the whole world, if we skip to 3 minutes and 2 seconds into that video, we see...
Guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge!
Oh, geez. That's me. I know I'm a little late to the party, but since we've all had enough time to grow and reflect as people, I would like to finally share some of my thoughts and experiences working on YouTube Rewind 2018. The first thing I want to talk about is how none of the YouTubers involved got any type of monetary compensation. At least none of the ones I talked to did. This was a big issue that a lot of other YouTubers had in their expose videos, but I personally was not bothered by it. Was I getting paid in exposure? Yes. In fact, I actually lost money doing this because I had to get my friend Rush to animate some of the scenes, so I, you know, paid him for his work. But what I'm trying to tell you is that as much as I'm about to complain about YouTube Rewind, don't feel any sort of empathy for me, okay? I did this to myself. I think the best piece of advice I could give you is that if YouTube ever reaches out to you and is like, hey, do you want to be a part of Rewind? You should say, let me read the script first. But I didn't know that in 2018. And I also didn't know that in 2017. If you look at YouTube Rewind 2017 and watch all the way to the end, keep going. Right there. Right there in the credits is me and Jaden doing a floss in space. It was a lot cooler back then. They also wanted all the animators to animate our characters in the middle of a jello fight, and I think they wanted to put our cartoon characters over footage of real-life YouTubers in the middle of a jello fight, but they gave us no direction, and I don't think they ever filmed a scene where they were like, okay, real-life YouTubers, remember to leave that spot empty because that's where the animated guy's gonna go. Because, you know, they gotta plan that kind of stuff out ahead of time, right? So instead, they just threw our unusable animated jello fight with no background at the very end as this extremely out-of-place post-credit scene. So 2017 was pretty uneventful for me. Like, yeah, I was in YouTube Rewind, but, you know, I was in the credits. Who's going to stick around and watch the credits, you know? But 2018 was going to be my year. Rewind wanted me back, and this time they were giving me a speaking role. Holy sh**. My line was going to be, guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. And then the YouTuber Swoozy, who would be in his real-life human form, would say, right? And then we'd fist bump Who Framed Roger Rabbit style. So do you remember that trend in 2018 where people were doing that dance outside of their moving car? Well, apparently, that was called the In My Feelings challenge. Back in 2018, I didn't even know it was called that. I thought it was called stupid. Now, if you've at all watched YouTube Rewind 2018, Everyone Controls Rewind, hashtag YouTube Rewind, you might be wondering why, after I specifically suggest we do the In My Feelings challenge, that not a single YouTuber or talk show host can be seen dancing outside of a moving vehicle. That's because YouTube didn't want to promote unsafe behavior, so they didn't want to show anyone dancing outside of a car. So they weren't really doing the challenge then, were they? YouTube, if you don't want to promote unsafe behavior, don't promote the In My F***ing Feelings challenge. Kids are still going to look up the In My Feelings challenge and then watch multiple videos of people dancing outside of cars on YouTube. We don't want to promote unsafe behavior. It's on your platform, dog. You know, looking back, that should have been my first red flag, but I was still optimistic. I was so excited to be a part of this huge project, and I knew there were going to be a bunch of YouTubers involved, but I was going to be one of the few animated ones. I was going to stand out. I was going to be the odd one out. Knowing how Rewind handled animation in 2017, when they asked me to be a part of 2018, I told them, hey, love the line, but I think it would be a good idea if we met in person, you know, and that way you can show me everything you're planning, and I can ask you all the right questions. And they agreed and invited me to visit the set the day they were filming Swoozie's line. So I was there, physically behind the camera, when Swoozie said, right? And then fist bumped nothing. I got to experience what it was like to be on a real film set with actors and directors and costumes and catering and makeup, and it was a lot, honestly, for just one line. And maybe it was because they had booked Swoozie for a full hour, but they had this beautiful man say, right? And then fist bump nothing no less than 50 times. It's one line, guys. I think we got it. And then after, like, take 87, my stomach sank when the director said, okay, Swoozie, how about you try saying, guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. Wait a minute. That's my line. Are we changing it? Which line am I animating now? Do you want me to do both, just like how you got Swoozie to do both? And what? Oh, you'll pick your favorites? I asked the director right there which line was I animating, and he said he was going to let me know. And then we went outside and filmed Swoozie dance in front of a brick wall, and which parts of him dancing was I going to animate my guy next to? He said he was going to let me know that too. So I took all the information I learned that day and referred it back to the other animators. What they wanted were two shots. They wanted 5 seconds of our characters dancing, and they wanted another shot of all of us sitting around a campfire singing horribly. After doing some quick math, I realized that if all 7 of us animators did a 5-second dance, that would be 35 seconds of cartoons dancing, which for a YouTube Rewind would be a lot of screen time. I had a sinking feeling that they weren't going to be using our full 5-second clips, and they didn't even let me know. Now, for my life-changing speaking role, I had to record my line on my own, which normally wouldn't be a problem. But in late 2018, I had just moved to California, and I didn't have my own setup set up. And to make the whole situation worse, I was only given 1 week to finish my animation and record my line. So, you know, the clock was ticking. Now, I think the second best piece of advice I could give you is that if you're ever in need of a quick jerry-rigged sound booth, go into your closet and hide under a comforter. In fact, hello, real-life human James here, coming to you on a Blue Yeti inside of a bathroom. The acoustics in here are terrible. Could you imagine voicing a cartoon character in this? Guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. See, it doesn't work. Now, all right, and now we're here inside of our makeshift sound booth, and you can hopefully hear the quality change right away, you know, like, guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. See, you know, we don't need expensive sound booths to have a good time. But back in 2018, I wanted the most important line in my career to be recorded in a professional sound booth. Luckily, I was in luck. You see, California is one of the few places home to something called a YouTube space. A YouTube space advertises itself as a place to aid content creators, providing them with facilities to create content for their YouTube channels. And to access said facilities, you needed at least 10,000 subscribers. A little weird they put a number on it, but I get it. I had just moved to California. I knew I was going to be hitting this place up all the time. When I first went to the YouTube space, I didn't call ahead or set up an appointment or anything, because there wasn't an option to do so on the website. But I figured they would have to help me out, right? The line I needed to record was for a YouTube Rewind. And you're a YouTube space! Like, Susan personally asked me to be here, you know? So I drove an hour to the space, I went inside, showed them my sub count, and they said that in order to use the facilities, I had to fill out all these forms on my computer back home. But it's for YouTube Rewind. Then I drove another hour back home and started filling out the forms, but by the time I got to the quizzes, I realized, huh, I think this wild goose chase is probably going to take longer than a week to resolve. With time running out, I gingerly asked my new friend Aaron if I could use his setup, and he said yes, and I didn't even have to show him my sub count. I mean, I showed him anyway, though. So the line you hear me say in the 2018 Rewind was recorded in the Game Grumps office, which I think means, at the very least, Game Grumps deserves to be credited in the description of Rewind. Come on, YouTube! They were the only ones who took me in when your own company turned me away! The deadline was fast approaching. I mean, it was fast approaching as soon as I got it, but I've been in crunch mode before, and I'm sure the nameless video editors were just trying to hit their impossibly tight deadlines too. I reminded myself what I was making all of these sacrifices for. Everyone was going to unanimously love this video and what it represents and look up my channel afterwards and subscribe. December 6th, 2018. A day that changed history. It was raining that day, and the world was exposed to what YouTube had been cooking up. And they all collectively hated it. Like, a lot. Like, to the point where I would be lucky if I didn't lose subscribers. I think the audience knew that none of the YouTubers involved had any say in the creative process. We were just reading our lines from YouTube script, you know? So at least I get to say I'm in the most disliked video in history, and no one's too mad at me. Right? So was all of this stress worth it? Now, I got paid in exposure, and the exposure was overwhelmingly negative. In fact, I think Rewind was only positive for one other YouTuber. Do you have any guesses? Jaden motherfucking Animations pulled off the biggest prank of 2018. One of the reasons people disliked 2018's Rewind was because PewDiePie, the number one YouTuber at the time, wasn't included. But Jaden, being the genius that she is, knew he wasn't going to be included again, so she snuck in a PewDiePie reference into her 5-second dance, and no one caught it, and it made the final cut. Jaden was crowned the least cringy part of Rewind, and everyone loved her, and she got a big boost in subscribers, and all I gotta say to that is, good job, Jaden. How are you enjoying that cake and eating it, too? Now, there were a lot of valid reasons why people disliked 2018's Rewind. One of them being that the video starts out with Will Smith? He's not a YouTuber. But they didn't seem to mind when 2016 started out with The Rock and 2017 started with The Colbert Show, but whatever. And I don't know if you remember what YouTube was like in 2018, but it was in the news a couple of times, you know, over a few small things. However, with all of that being said, I do genuinely miss YouTube Rewinds. Getting to wake up and go, wow, it's December and a new YouTube Rewind just dropped. I'm going to watch it. And then I get to see a handful of YouTubers I recognize do a dance and not recognize any of the other YouTubers. And then I get to see the rest of the internet's reaction to it. It's better than Christmas for me. Even if it's the cringiest video ever, we still all watched it together as a community. And I think that's what I miss the most, when YouTube felt more like a community. As long as it's not a top 10 video, I welcome back YouTube Rewinds with open arms. And if they do make a comeback, I don't think I'd want to be a part of them. Not because I got burned in 2018, but because I wouldn't want to rob another ignorant YouTuber of the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be taken advantage of and work for free and be a part of history. For now, we just have to live with the 9 rewinds we do have. But if you're like me and are just dying to see more YouTube Rewind content, and I know you are because you're still here, I've discovered a pretty massive Easter egg. In the description of Rewind 2018 is a link to See All the Easter Eggs. And for your viewing pleasure are 13 brand new shorts that I can only describe as skits that were edited together with existing Rewind footage. I don't think that's what an Easter egg is. They're not that funny and are pretty hard to watch, but isn't that what Rewind's all about? Have a good night.
Kiki, do you love me? Are you riding? Don't you ever say, cause I want you.
And I want you.
And I want you.
And I want you.
Don't you ever, hey.
Oh, that's
out. I don't know the rest of the words.
Oh, that's out.
All right, I think we got it. I understand that there are things that I don't understand. For example, theoretical physics or how to make friends. But I do know that the world is not flat, that vaccines work, and listening to people tell me otherwise is admittedly a guilty pleasure of mine. Whether it's conspiracy theories or horoscopes, I love watching people pour their heart into something they genuinely believe in, only for me to go, I disagree. But please, continue. There are some beliefs that I don't agree with, but are absolutely fine to believe in, like thinking bucket hats look good on someone. But I think we can all agree that some beliefs can be incredibly damaging to a person, or even humanity as a whole, like the anti-vaxxers, or racists. So I discovered a new trend, and I'm not sure if it's just kids being kids, or a mentally damaging belief system, but I'm still gonna talk about it and explain to my audience the importance of critical thinking and to notice the red flags and dangerous beliefs. So what am I talking about? I unfortunately fell down a rabbit hole and discovered a community of mostly kids on a phone application called TikTok doing something called reality shifting. This, by the way, is not a small community of like 20 people. There are amino groups with thousands of members, videos with hundreds of thousands of views, and they have their own acronyms. OMG. Reality shifting stems from the belief in parallel universes, which, I gotta be honest, I'm not completely sold on that idea to begin with. You say that Schrodinger's cat is both alive and dead, but cats have 9 lives, so are 4.5 cats dead? How is a cat half dead? Either way, someone supposedly very smart has said that every decision you've ever made has caused the universe to copy itself and create a new reality where you made the different decision. I had cereal for breakfast this morning, but somewhere there's a reality where I ate my hamster for breakfast. Does that mean I create a new universe every time I scratch my butt, and somewhere there's a James with better manners? So times that by 8 billion people making decisions every day, plus the decisions made by, like, dogs and jellyfish, right? Those count, I think. And we get roughly infinity total realities. If you've seen Endgame, you know what I'm talking about. The reality shifting community says that since there are infinite realities, then there's a reality where GameStop stock is incredibly low, or that COVID didn't happen. Or perhaps there's even a reality out there where Hogwarts is real, and a messenger owl just dropped off your acceptance letter. And through the right meditation, you can transfer your consciousness from your current reality, your CR for short, to your Hogwarts desired reality, your DR. And for some gosh darn reason, Hogwarts is the number one shiftable destination location. But obviously, it's not just Hogwarts. Any fictional universe is fair game. You could go to the Hunger Games or Lord of the Rings. I'm not sure why, though. A lot of bad things happen there. And since all logic is thrown out the window, cartoon and anime realities are shiftable destinations. Because if Schrodinger's cat taught us anything, it's that there are some universes that are just 24 drawings a second. So because there are allegedly infinite realities, people will write down what they want their desired reality to be, and this is called a script. It's funny, you know, normally scripts are made to tell fictional stories, but these people think that what they write down will be 100% real. And you can make a script of whatever you want. You can say, I want to shift to Hogwarts and be in a relationship with Draco Malfoy. I mean, not me, this is just an example. Now listen, you're a smart kid, okay? Hopefully, I don't have to explain to you that that's not how life works. If you believe you can hop into different realities,
then that's great, and I see no problem with it. Is what I would say in a different reality, but in this reality, I have a lot of questions. If you can shift your consciousness into a different version of you, what happens to the alternate reality you's consciousness? You're just taking over someone else's body. This other you had a life and a family, unless you're going to a YA fantasy novel, and you just took over their whole body. What if there's a you in an alternate reality that's like, I want to live in a reality where there's a pandemic and I'm sadder, and then they shifted here? What happens to your consciousness? You don't trade. The reality shifting community says that when you shift, you leave behind a clone of yourself. Obviously. So when you shift, there's someone's consciousness unaccounted for. What about the realities where one of you had waffles for breakfast and the other had pancakes? Both of these yous are pretty much the exact same. So then both of you will want to reality shift to the exact same Harry Potter reality. Do you have to share a body with the other yous that have shifted to the same reality? Are you telling me that Voldemort and any fictional villain is real? How come half of us didn't get turned to dust when Thanos snapped? If anyone can reality shift, are you telling me there's a chance that Voldemort could download TikTok and reality shift here? If you go to Hogwarts, you're leading Voldemort right to us. How can there be a reality where magic is real? Sure, I don't know how parallel universes work, but they're parallel, so the laws of physics should still be the same, right?
But James, I know that reality shifting makes no sense and is impossible, but then why do so many people claim to have shifted?
Because they're dreaming. Shifting happens when you fall asleep, and if you fill your subconscious with things from your desired reality, would you be surprised that you had a dream about Hogwarts? Something about this trend doesn't sit right with me. A lot of the reality shifting TikToks were done by kids, and kids, as you know, can get really obsessed in the fandom and do some cringy stuff. If these kids were making fanfiction and writing themselves on a date with Bakugo, that would be totally fine. Healthy even. Heck, even if these kids flat out said, I love Harry Potter so much that I want to manipulate my dreams to be about him, that would be fine too! But something about actually believing that you're astral projecting into a fictional universe? I don't know, that level of obsession just feels unhealthy, my guy. And also, back off Bakugo, he's mine. The problem with reality shifting and actually conspiracy theories as a whole is that they pretend to be based on factual evidence when they're entirely a pseudoscience. You start off with a scientific idea, multiple realities, and then you make up whatever you want and use what the scientists have said about multiple realities as proof. Even though no scientist has said anything about being able to move your consciousness outside of your body, or that you leave a clone of yourself behind when you reality shift, or that cartoon universes exist. I've seen people in videos say that they've done research on reality shifting, but I feel confident in saying you didn't get a degree in quantum physics. I want you to cite your sources and show me the studies, because research isn't just believing what other people said on TikTok. These TikToks get impressionable kids to believe in reality shifting in pretty manipulative ways, saying that if you didn't shift, it's because you didn't believe hard enough. When you get these doubts and say, oh, I can't shift, I don't even know if it's real anymore at this point, try and ask yourself after, but what if it's real? What if I can shift? You want to find out, do you? I get it. Harry Potter is a cool world. That's why they made a whole theme park about it. Who wouldn't want to drop out of a Muggle public school and live in a castle with a bunch of soft British boys? And also magic or whatever. But you need to be mindful about where you're getting your information. I've watched hours of flat earthers and anti-vaxxers talk about their beliefs, and these people get their information from non-credible sources, and they end up pushing more fake information online, and it creates this echo chamber that warps their worldview. I don't want kids watching these TikToks or going on Amino and essentially get lied to and think this is how the world works. I'm hoping that all of these people will look back at themselves in 10 years and go, yeesh, I can't believe I was so obsessed about a thing, I literally tried to astral project myself across the multiverse. Right, Bakugo? I know that this reality can suck sometimes, and right now it's looking pretty bad. But like it or not, this is the one reality we get. A lot of things may be out of your control, but according to theoretical physics, we make a lot of choices, and all our choices lead us down different paths. So what you need to do is not give up on this reality for a literal fictitious one, but instead to make choices that will make this current reality your desired reality. Thank you all for coming to my TED Talk.
So originally I was going to make a video talking about Boy Scouts because I was a Boy Scout, but then as I was writing the script I thought about all the fun things I did as a Cub Scout. So here we are. Cub Scouts is something you can do before you're old enough to be a Boy Scout. It's not required to do Cub Scouts to be a Boy Scout. It's just if you're up to it or if your parents signed you up, you can do it. Now you're already pretty young when you can start doing Boy Scouts. It's why it's called Boy Scouts, not Man Scouts. You can start doing Cub Scouts when you're 7. At what point does it just become babysitting in uniform? So all you people watching over the age of 7, let me tell you what you missed out on. Unlike Boy Scouts that wear a tan uniform, Cub Scouts wear a dark blue uniform. Now there are 4 ranks to the Cub Scouts. There were some requirements you had to do to go up the ranks, but if you went to the meetings every week, you'd be fine. You didn't have to do anything on your own time. And even if you did all the requirements in the rank, you still had to be in the rank for at least a year. So basically the ranks were based on your age. When you were 7 years old in first grade, you were a Tiger Scout. The second graders were the Wolf Scouts, the third graders were the Bear Scouts, and the fourth graders, aka the really cool ones because you're the oldest. Actually, before I tell you, just guess what the mascot for the fourth and final rank of Cub Scouts is. Leave your guesses in the comment box below. Just kidding, don't do that. I don't care. We have a tiger, a wolf, and a bear. That rhymed. What animal is cooler than all 3 of those? I'll tell you. Nothing. And that was the mascot. There was no mascot. Welcome to the real world, fourth graders! There's no such thing as cartoon anthropomorphic animals. So if you did guess anything in the comments, you were wrong. I told you not to guess. The fourth and final rank of Cub Scouts was called Weebelos. Weeb-a-los. Very fitting name. It goes Tiger Wolf Bear Weebelos? What kind of animal is that? Apparently it's supposed to stand for We Be Loyal Scouts, cause we talk like pirates. Don't worry, Cub Scouts, I'll make you a mascot for the Weebelos. Here, it's a made-up animal for a made-up word. Use it however you like. The Wikipedia page also talked about a bobcat badge, but I don't remember doing that, so that's whatever, it's not important. I can't even remember what we did as Cub Scouts. We would just meet at some person's house. I think it was one of the kids' moms, and she just had some activity for us to do outside, and we would just play. My mom told me that she was my scout leader for a year, but I don't remember that. I do remember we talked about bike safety, and I remember I fell off my bike a lot. I still got the award, though. Each rank had a handbook that said what activities you would do, and I looked on Google for pictures of the handbook, and I found these books with gritty, serious, tough covers, and I was shocked because the handbooks I grew up with had the mascots on them, and I liked it! The old books were cute and had pictures! You're not trying to get rid of the mascots, are you, Cub Scouts? I think it's funny that each mascot gets progressively unhealthier, which is why my Weebelo mascot looks the way it does. And I think I might be suppressing this memory, but every time we went up a rank, there would be this award ceremony thrown by the leaders, and I think we metaphorically drank the blood of the mascot. I mean, it was really just fruit juice, but...
Hello?
Hey, TJ.
Hey, James.
Do you remember Cub Scouts?
Yeah.
Did we, whenever we went up the ranks, did we metaphorically drink the blood of the mascot?
I think that's just something our leaders did. Like, some leaders chose to do it and ours did, but I don't think everyone did it.
Oh. We had weird leaders.
Yeah, I guess we did.
Okay, bye, TJ. So another thing we did as Cub Scouts was go to this thing called Cub Scout Day Camp. I don't know if it was just an Arizona thing, but I hated it. Cub Scout Day Camp took camping and made it unfun. And surprisingly, even as a 7 and 8 year old, I loved camping. Really, James? Someone who sits in front of the computer all day drawing Pokemon? You like toughing it out and sleeping in the woods? Yes! Oh, yes! If you've never been camping, get on that! I'm talking about real camping, though, not this day camp. Cub Scout Day Camp was during the summer, an Arizona summer. And we would get up super early, like 8 o'clock, eat breakfast at home, and then you and your whole troop carpooled for about 2 hours to camp. There were a bunch of other Cub Scout troops that met there, too. It was a pretty big thing. You were supposed to pack your own lunch, and all the other boys had really cool lunches, like Lunchables and Go-Gurts and, ironically, Subway. I was jealous of kids with Subway sandwiches, and all my mom packed me was a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on wheat bread. So before the day even starts, I'm
I'm already in a bad mood. You start the day sitting in this big auditorium, but it's outside. The leaders would tell you to drink lots of water, and they actually gave all the troops a bag of water balloons, and they wanted us to throw them at each other because that would keep us moist and not die of heat stroke. But water balloons are stupid because 90% of the time they don't even break on impact. You're just beating some poor kid to death with a bag of water. Then you would separate into your troop, and there was a rotation of activities for you to do all day. We ate dinner, and then we went back to the auditorium, and some of the leaders put on a play. I mean, it was a pretty dumb play, but I was invested in the story. But then at 10 p.m., you went home. You didn't even get to sleep in a tent. Sleeping in a tent is one of the most fun things about camping. And also, the whole time, we didn't get a campfire, because it's dangerous to have fire around 7 to 10-year-olds or something. But they did let us do archery, because that's safe. Then the next day, you went back and you did it all over again. And then you would do it for a third day, too. So 3 days of this. 3 days of people throwing water balloons at you, and you can't get them back because you have a weak throwing arm. And you're probably wondering, James, what's with all the complaining? This sounds like fun. I mean, sure, other kids probably had fun. I might have been a little dramatic as an 8-year-old. One time on the second day of camping, I was clumsy and I kept falling off the rocks that I was climbing on. And I kept getting all these scrapes and bruises and they really hurt. And then we went swimming. That was one of the activities. There was a swimming pool. But just being the little punk kid that I was like, no, I don't want to go swimming. So they made me sit off to the side and they said I couldn't swim. But then later I was like, I want to go swimming now. After you swam, the leaders told you to check your shoes for scorpions, and I remember I didn't check because I hated everyone. And you know the play the leaders put on at the end of the day? It was split up into three parts, one part for each day. So it was left on a cliffhanger. I wanted to go see it, but everyone else in the troop wanted to play with water balloons. And I never found out how the play ended! The next morning, when I was supposed to leave for the third day, I told my mom that I didn't want to go, and she had to tell the carpool that her son didn't want to go because he's a huge puss. And then afterwards, when they were handing out the awards, I didn't get a single award, because I didn't go the third day, so I didn't finish any of the activities. And then I never went back to Cub Scout Day Camp since. And that's why I hated it. I wanted to make this video about 6 months ago, but then I thought, no, I'll save it for Halloween, because of theming or whatever. I don't know. Shut up, I don't have to explain myself. I'm excited to tell you this story.
Wow!
So, haunted houses. I think haunted houses, they're fine, but I don't want to brag or anything, but since the age of 16, I've never been in a haunted house that I was scared of. Granted, all the haunted houses I've been in were free and didn't have me sign a waiver, and when I was little, sure, I was terrified of haunted houses. It's just, I don't know, I think I kept telling myself that none of it was real, and then when I grew up, I just always knew that none of it was real. When you can see the severed hand is made of plastic, all the tension you previously had is kinda lost. And sure, I still get startled at the jump scares, but since they don't stab you or anything, it's always awkward afterwards. Hello? I'm just gonna walk this way now. Or maybe I don't get scared because I don't feel emotions anymore. Who knows? But there's one haunted house experience during my senior year of high school that I will never forget because it was probably one of the most traumatizing things I've ever seen. I haven't seen that many traumatizing things. And also, I won't forget it because I'm about to immortalize the experience by making a YouTube video about it. Alright, my senior year, I was part of my school's drama club. I was a theater kid. And the clubs at the school got to help do some of the activities for the school's fair. The whole school was putting on a fair, probably to raise money or something. It seems that schools are always in need of some extra cash. Have you ever noticed that? So the football team got to do the dunk tank, the band kids, like, face painted or something. I don't remember. It's not important. And the theater kids, since the fair is in October and that's Halloween's month, we got to put on a haunted house. Cool! The drama club was separated into groups, and we would each be a scary part in the haunted house. And we gotta make the haunted house inside the school, so we had a lot of area to work with, and there was a lot of space in between each scary thing. My group, what we did, is we dressed up as vampires, but scary vampires, and we sat at this dinner table, and we decorated it with fake organs, goblets filled with blood, red Kool-Aid, and we had this freshman girl that was laying on top of the table, and we put fake organs coming out of her, you know, to make it look like we were eating her, because vampires eat people. Okay, saying that out loud, I realize that doesn't make any sense. Why would a group of vampires be eating someone? They don't do that. We put a yellow shade over the light above for a good spoopy atmosphere. We had a smoke machine, some ambient Halloween music playing. Spooky, scary skeletons and shivers down your spine. Our group was pretty legit. Whenever a group of people walked by, we would just silently stare at them, and then the freshman on the table would scream at the top of her lungs. She was really good at screaming, by the way. And since we had so much space in between each of the scary parts, when they walked past us, we would get up and chase them. Yeah, it was fun. Okay, so you have to understand that theater kids are very loud, extroverted people. I need to tell you about this one kid who was in my vampire group. We'll just name him Balake. Yeah, Balake. Balake and I were both part of the school's improv club, so we were both pretty funny people, except Balake was just out there. He was loud. It seemed he was just always screaming. I didn't have any classes with him, but he was obviously the high self-esteem class clown kind of kid. So Balake, being the loud and more popular kid, he got to sit at the head of our table. We had done the haunted house for about 2 hours at this point, and I want you to think what it's like to go inside a haunted house. Just going in for 5 minutes, that will already make me feel uncomfortable and sweaty. All the strobe lights, the smoke, and the freshmen over here who had to be constantly screaming bloody murder. Again, you did a good job, freshmen. And we were supposed to get a break sometime in the middle, but since the haunted house was so popular, we didn't get one break. So I'm a little loopy after doing all this for so long, right? I was totally not ready for what was about to happen. This group of people walk in, and we do our normal thing. We get up and we chase them, but Balake got pretty physical with this one little boy. Like, he kind of shook him up a bit. And I didn't see exactly what happened, but apparently this little boy was holding a fish in a plastic baggie. You know those little tiny fish that are actually supposed to be used as food for bigger fish that you can win as prizes in fairs, and 99% of the time the fish die within 2 weeks because you don't have the right aquarium equipment, so you just put them in water and watch them slowly die? You know those fish? I didn't think people were allowed to bring their new pet fish into the haunted house, but I guess he smuggled it in or something. I didn't see the kid drop the fish. Maybe Balake slapped it out of his hands. That could have happened. I just heard a scream, and I saw a fish flopping around in a puddle on the floor. Fish look like they're in so much pain when they're out of water. I don't flail around uncontrollably when I go swimming. Like, calm down, fish. I'm silently panicking, because the fish looks like he's going to die in 3 seconds if we don't do something. I start thinking of places we can put the fish. The toilet. But Balake, without saying anything, just immediately bent down, cupped the tiny fish in his hands, he ran back to the table, he put the fish in an empty goblet, and then he poured red Kool-Aid into the cup? Nah, I'm just kidding. He got a water bottle from under the table because they gave us water bottles, and the fish was fine, ladies and gentlemen. It all happened so fast, and thanks to Balake's quick thinking, he saved this little kid's fish. The kid was still a couple of feet down the hall. Balake took the goblet in his hands, he walked it over to the kid, he reached out his hand to give the kid his fish. And then he just chugged the drink! Balake! He drank the fish! And this little kid let out the most blood-curdling scream. It sounded like this kid just watched his pet get swallowed by a complete stranger. It was honestly the loudest scream I heard that night. I bet the next group of people behind these guys were thinking, oh man, whatever's next must be really scary to get that kid to scream like that. The kid started trying to attack Balake, and I'm sure if he had the correct tools, he would have murdered him. Balake eventually spat out the fish. He didn't swallow it, thankfully. He just kept it swimming in his mouth. But I mean, that's what you gotta do when you're working in a haunted house. You have to scare people any way you can. I was just a bystander, and I still wake up in a cold sweat thinking about it. Turns out this kid was actually Balake's little brother, so at least he didn't do this to a complete stranger. Man, you really gotta appreciate what lengths older brothers go through to torment the little brother. Balake's little brother, you might be watching. But I was there, dude. I know what pain you go through. I have an older brother, too. I know what it's like to be Luigi. I mean, he never swallowed any of my pets. He would just steal my food. He also never let me win in Super Smash Bros. Anytime I was about to win, he would turn off the Nintendo. But I mean, I'm fine. Look how I turned out.
Here's a little social interaction life hack I've discovered. If you're meeting someone new and you want to get to know them better, and you see any semblance of a tattoo peeking out of their sleeve, compliment it. If that person doesn't want to talk about their tattoos, they'll say, oh, thank you. Anyway, this is my stop. But if they do want to talk about their tattoos, their face will light up and then they'll do the rest of the talking. I realize that by giving you this advice, now anytime I compliment someone else's tattoos, it will seem disingenuous. But it's not, most of the time. I love all of your tattoos. That's right, I'm talking to you. I love your tattoos, dude. Whether it's how you got the tattoo, the meaning behind the tattoo, or being a tattoo of something you like, every tattoo is a story. And most people love telling stories about themselves. I wouldn't know anything about that, personally. I never understood why some people liked talking about their tattoos until I got one of my own. What, you think I'm gonna make a whole video about tattoos when I didn't even have any? That's right, I'm a marked man, Mom. What are you gonna do about it? Stop unconditionally loving me? Yeah, right. Wait, what are you doing with that cheese grater? Okay, but in all seriousness, can you make sure Grandma doesn't see this video, Mom? I don't want to upset her on the way out. Back in the day, tattoos used to be a symbol of rebellion and meant you couldn't get a job. No regrets, baby! But I feel like tattoos are getting more and more accepted, if not expected. I'll see a jacked, bald guy covered in tattoos and think, Okay, yeah, he was meant to look like that. For me, the idea of being a badass tattooed guy with a sketch pad and a beanie and ripped jeans and a beaded bracelet always seemed cool to me. But like most people, when it came to tattoos, I had reservations. Ooh, this is gonna be on my body forever? What if I hate it? I had an idea once of getting these 5 Magic the Gathering symbols tattooed on my forearm. I even dotted them out in Sharpie once just to give them a test drive. But I ultimately decided not to get them because I was worried in 5 years I would go, oh, these? I was really into Magic the Gathering in my 20s. Not anymore, though, so now every morning I wake up with impending feelings of shame and remorse that I even decided to get this thing. And I didn't want that to happen, even though I've been playing Magic for over 15 years, and it means a lot to me, and I'm going to be buried with my Sliver deck, and... alright, maybe I should just get it. Even though people know that tattoos are permanent, there are still way more bad tattoos than there should be. One time, I saw this picture of someone's tattoo on a bad tattoo subreddit, and I thought it'd be funny to prank my family group chat by photoshopping that tattoo onto my arm. And then I thought it'd be funny to post that picture onto Instagram. I didn't think anyone would fall for this poor excuse of a Photoshop job, but then the internet and my family proved me wrong. Immediately, I started getting phone calls from my parents, and even my book agent rang me up and was like, "Did you actually get that tattoo?" "No, it's not a real tattoo." I mean, it is a real tattoo, but it's on someone else's body. That's their cross to bear. I can only imagine what that person's family and book agent went through. My parents were not supportive of me getting tattoos. But whose are, am I right? Some people, like my parents, say that your body is like a temple, and getting tattoos is like putting graffiti on it. Which, sure. Okay, that's why I paid a professional graffiti artist to paint my temple exactly how I wanted. Also, you can't tell me not to deform my body when that's exactly what you did before I was even 24 hours old. Also, Jesus had piercings, and he loved showing them off to his buddies, so I think he'd be chill with a little tattoo. After much thought and deliberation, I finally settled on what my first tattoo would be. This was going to be permanently inked onto my body for the rest of my life. I got a tattoo in Courier New. Luckily, the artist was able to finish this in one session. It took quite a while, almost 5 whole minutes. Now let me explain why I got it. It was so that if anyone ever asked me, "Do you have any tattoos?" I could go, "Why, yes, I do." And then roll up my sleeve, and then I'd go, "Ha, ha, ha." When I showed off my tattoo on Jaden's Streamathon, there was one comment that said, "James having tattoo actually tattooed onto him is exactly the kind of tattoo I expected James to have." And that made me feel really good because that meant the tattoo fit my vibe. And the second reason I got the tattoo was because I wanted to rebel. Since tattoos were frowned upon growing up, I wanted to have one just to have one. So I got a tattoo with no meaning whatsoever, which in a way is the meaning. Even though the tattoo was small and usually covered up by my sleeve, I still felt anxious about getting it. And I continued to feel that way for about a week after I got it. It was a jump scare every time I saw it in the mirror, and I would look at it closely and go, "Yep, that's really in there. I sure hope I don't regret this." But then, after some time, the tattoo just became a part of me. Like, I didn't look in the mirror and go, "Yep, there's James and tattoo." I would go, "Yep, there's James. Full stop." And from that day on, I loved giving people advice on tattoos. As a marked man myself, I think you should absolutely get that Shadow the Hedgehog full back piece. YOLO, remember? What? You're worried that it's going to look bad when you're 70? Yeah, it's going to look bad when you're 70. You're 70. Don't think about how bad it's going to look. Think about how much you're going to enjoy it from now to when you're 69. I've known people my age who still hide their tattoos from their parents, but like the honest prodigal son that I am, I wasn't going to be doing that. But the next time I visited my parents, I walked into their house, and the very first thing my mom said to me was, "Do you have any tattoos?" She beat me to the punch. What? Why would you ask that? Because last night, I had a dream that you came home and were covered in tattoos. So, which one of you incepted my mom? God? I said, are all tattoos bad? Yes, all of them are bad. Even this one. And I rolled up my sleeve and revealed my massive tat. And her reaction was, ah. Oh. Well, it's not the worst word to have permanently inked on your body. Later on, she said, if you go to a Star Wars party, you could change it to Tatooine. So, I think she took it pretty goodly. Now, some of you might be thinking that my epic sleeve of a tattoo isn't that big a deal. It's tiny and can only be seen if I'm swimming or boxing or wearing a tank top. But you see, after getting tattooed, I experienced what people in the tattooing business call catching the bug. After seeing how much I liked my first tattoo and knowing that I could handle having a tattoo, I was ready to get something badass. I set up a big boy tattoo appointment with an artist I liked, and when I was in the tattoo shop, the artist asked, is this your first tattoo? Is this my first tattoo? No, sweetheart. I think I know a thing or two about tattoos. So, without further ado, I would like to debut this out of the blue tattoo. You know, from The Dark Crystal, the Jim Henson 80s puppet movie that I did a video on it years ago. Now I have the best character permanently inked onto my skin forever and ever. That movie will always hold a special place in my heart, and now it'll hold a special place under my skin. And now, whenever I show someone The Chamberlain, we end up talking about The Dark Crystal, which is great, because that's what I wanted to talk about anyways. I think I just discovered an autistic conversational cheat code. When I was getting it done, the artist asked me if there were any other tattoos that I wanted to get, and I said, why, yes I do. I wanted to get the computer from Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, because I also love that series, and because I'm a computery guy. And I didn't realize until as I was explaining it to the artist that both of these characters are puppets. So, I don't know what that says about my psyche. I never thought that I liked puppets that much, but if anyone wants to psychoanalyze me in the comments, that'd be great. And speaking of YouTube comments, I know a lot of people are going to bring this up, so I'm just going to address it right now. You probably noticed that Chamberlain isn't holding his iconic triangle scepter. Yeah, I already know that. That's because he's holding the Emperor's scepter. It's like my own little headcanon. He got to be the Emperor because he's cool and awesome. And come on, Dark Crystal fans. You think I don't know my lore? I didn't get the wrong scepter or anything. You think I'd get something wrong about the Dark Crystal? Okay, you want to know what happened? I own a Chamberlain statue because, of course, I do. And I took pictures of it to send as a reference image to the artist. And I totally forgot that I accidentally broke off his triangle scepter. And now, because of that, he's holding an entirely different scepter on the tattoo. But you know what? I don't care. This one's better. It's a more clear silhouette. Now, this time when I went to show my parents the tattoo, I don't know exactly what I was hoping for, but I wanted to see some dramatic pearl clutching. You know, just some real disappointment. Chamberlain had to be split up into two sessions, and I only got one done when I went to Arizona for a wedding. I saw my mom, and she didn't immediately ask me if I had any more tattoos. God didn't tattle on me this time. I told her, Mom, I gotta tell you something, privately. What is it? I need you to keep a secret from Grandma. Okay. I'm serious. Grandma can't find out about this. Okay. Look, it's Chamberlain. And I showed her the unfinished tattoo, and she went, oh,